if I can somehow get across the border, I want to be part of the Slapshot. Johnny Mackengal.
Can you skate?
Okay.
Can you skate?
Yeah, I can probably skate a little bit better than Lee.
Okay. Perfect.
That's all. I'm 80 years old.
No. Okay. Yeah, you're right. You got a few years on me. I want to get in on some of your other bets. So always keep me in mind when you're doing bets. I love this. Anytime. This is, I tell you this, guys, real quick. My life is complete. This is all I wanted to do was host a radio show with Leap.
There you go.
Doesn't get better than that.
Great talking, guys.
It's just a half step better than complete unemployment. All right, so I did not watch a moment of that presidential debate last night, Ziggy, but I did come away with one clip that I saw on Twitter that is going to define everything that happens on this show from now until whenever it is you and I are no longer doing this show.
I take full responsibility. It's not my fault.
Anything that goes wrong with this show, this is my point of view on it.
I take full responsibility. It's not my fault.
I take full responsibility, but it's not my fault.
It's never your fault, Scotty. Come on. Anything goes wrong, it's always my fault. I thought that was established early on.
It makes it so much easier that you're working from home, too. You know, we can just...
Of course.
We can just plot and scheme our way out of all the problems, and you're not even here to defend yourself.
Not that even if I'm there, that would matter. Let's be honest. All the things that go on behind the scenes with the show, I have no idea. All the pranks, all the mishaps. I just show up. I'm ready to go, and whatever you throw my way, I'm ready. It's kind of like, you know, here's the ball, run it down the field, and you have nobody in front of you for a touchdown. Like, sometimes I don't know what could happen, right? Like lightning could come down and hit me. You know, there could be a big amount of wind. I mean, wind can be dangerous, isn't it? Isn't wind dangerous? Or I could toe pick, right? Toe pick could happen, right? So
there could be
lots of bad things.
There could be a toe pick. We'll get into Stewie's appearance on Battle of the Blades. I want to see the sow cow. I want to see something on skates. I appreciate the twirl on his knees last night, and that looked very good. It was very well done, but I want to see something. I want to see the double or the triple Lutz or the sow cow or one of those things. But Daniel Jones last night took the cake. If you want a metaphor for what 2020 has been for all of us, if you want a metaphor for the state of the New York football Giants, how about this fake handoff quarterback bootleg where the seas parted and Daniel Jones had about 80 yards of open field ahead of him? All right, so that was the Spanish call.
My Spanish is not great. What was said?
Right, so that was the Spanish call, and I don't think that it paints the full picture for those of us who don't speak Spanish. So here's Ian Eagle's call on Westwood One.
But they're playing to the scouting report. Shotgun formation. Jones fakes it. Now he runs. He's got a huge hole. 25-30. And there he goes. Daniel Jones stumbles down at the 15. He could not get there. Running out of gas. Jones had nothing but green grass in front of him. And that typifies what this has been all about. He is down at the 8.
Daniel Jones had about 80 yards ahead of him. There was not an Eagles player within 10 or 15 yards. He is rolling with that 6'5" frame down the field. and at about the 20-yard line of the Philadelphia Eagles with nobody in behind him, more or less. There's hardly an Eagle in the screen. He trips over himself. He Patrick Stephan'd.
Okay, I
thought of Patrick Stephan right in that moment.
Okay, that was not a Patrick Stephan moment. It was bad, and yes, I couldn't stop laughing for a while. You have to remember, though, Daniel Jones is 6'5".
I don't think it's more likely that you're going to trip over yourself just because you're tall. Is that the argument?
I know, but I'm going to make the whole thing. He's 6'5". They clocked him at 21 miles per hour. That's like a 4.640. You and me can't run that fast. Oh, man, I'm not betting and I'm not running. So don't get any ideas. There is no way I'm sprinting 40 yards. So that's not, I'm just going to say you and me can't run that fast and this is done.
Apparently, Ziggy shares more than just a first name with Michael Johnson. He's pulling up lame the moment he thinks he doesn't have a chance.
I'm not betting. I'm just going to let you know facts. You and me can't run as fast as Daniel Jones. He's 6'5". He ran 80 yards that fast. You might fall. That can happen. The Patrick Stephan thing. Yeah, Patrick Stephan. That was okay. If the game was on the line. If it was last minute of the game and he had to get in right there to win it or to tie it, okay, fine. You can do the Patrick Stephan comparisons. Because the Patrick Stephan comparison was when he played for Atlanta and they were in Edmonton, he had an empty net and he missed the empty net with no one on him. Edmonton comes back, ties the game, and ends up winning the game. This is, yes, is it as funny? Yes. Is it the same? I don't think it's quite the same. It's a little bit different. But Daniel Jones, 80 yards. He had the, you know, end zone right in front of him. He toe picks. And yeah, I don't know. That was Ross Tucker doing the caller, laughing in the background. I don't know if you can hear him at all.
We'll have him on Monday morning.
Yeah, he's on. I'm sure this will come up Monday, but yeah, that just pretty much sums up the year, does it not?
Well,
no? Like,
I think that's one of those things that they'll laugh at way down the road, and they probably would have been able to laugh at it more had the Giants actually held on and won that game last night. Because the bigger discussion, Ziggy, is the fact that the Eagles, with a record now of 2-4-1, are atop the NFC East, and the New York Giants, who with the loss last night fell to 1-6, had they won last night, they would have been right there with Dallas atop the division. This division is tracking in a historic direction. So I'm saying, because this is actually a bet that's going to have to take on a little bit of life. Right? It was like the Mark Davis haircut bet last year, and no, I'm not betting my hair on this. The terms of the bet: will the winner of the NFC East have single-digit losses? Which is to say, will the winner of the NFC East, in Philadelphia's case, be 7-8-1, be 6-9-1? Will Dallas be 7-9 and win the division? Or are you willing to step out on the ledge and say, for the first time in history, a division winner in the NFL will be a double-digit loss team? Dallas will be 6-10 and win the division. Over, not under 9.5 losses to win that division.
Under. Eagles are going to do it. I already said that. I don't think Dallas is going to get in this year. Well, they're not going to win the division. Obviously, they're not going to get in, but the Eagles will still keep it respectable. You know, I like their schedule coming up. They have the Giants again in 2 weeks, I believe. And I think they're going to do it. I know injuries are a big problem and they've struggled, you know, for some games they should have won this year, but not a there. I mean, the Giants or Eagles, that matchup last night, that's it. Is that not one of the ugliest games?
Well, it's gross.
Of the year for you?
Like, that's two bad teams.
I know they're bad teams. I feel like the Eagles will pull it off this year. And I'm trying to figure out how they're going to do it. I just think if you see Carson Wentz, do you not like the play he made at the end of the game? He almost threw for almost 400 yards. Like, he threw for 360 yards. He can make big plays. Bad interception. I know that, like, that's completely.
They've
awful
had some offensive
gross,
line
but
injuries and issues. They had Lane Johnson back last night. What did
I'm
Mr. Branch?
Did you hear that?
My
laptop almost went off my desk.
Mr. Branch, are you there?
My laptop. Honestly, I'm at home. If I breathe on my table, it will come in over the system, right? Like, you'll hear anything.
Well, no. What happened was, I can see you on FaceTime. So,
oh, and it, like,
so the noise in it, every now and then I piss myself off when I do this, but every now and then I accidentally, like, I'll do it now. Like, I hit the mic.
Yeah. You hit the mic every once in a while. You get excited.
I talk with my hands and I know hits the mic and everything, but it was like there was an earthquake in your house because I'm watching you on FaceTime as you're talking
and
everything just started moving.
I take full responsibility. It's not my fault.
Yeah.
It's not my fault. I know.
But you take full responsibility.
I mean, yeah, that's, I mean, I think I made my first political comment in a year with the wind comment. So that's it for me. I'm done.
There you go.
I'm done with my, yeah. Well, but I don't know. Yeah, I just think Carson Wentz, I think he can pull it off. He hasn't been consistent so far, but if they can stay healthy, which has been the, I think that's the biggest issue.
Well,
for,
look at
for Philly.
Look at what they've got ahead. So they've got a huge game on Sunday Night Football against Dallas.
They're going to win
a week from Sunday night.
Yeah, they're going to win that. They're going to beat the Giants again, right?
Then they're going to, well, they have the bye week on November 8th, and then they will go to the Giants on November 15th. But here's where it gets a little hairier for Philadelphia. They're at the Browns. They're home to the Seahawks. They're at the Packers. They're home to the Saints. They're at the Cardinals, at the Cowboys, and home to Washington. So
yeah, Washington, I'm not like the last three. So where are their wins going to come from? They're going to beat Wash. They're going to beat Dallas both times, three. They're going to beat Arizona,
no,
four.
Ooh, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
No, I don't know about that. I don't trust them going to Cleveland. I don't trust them hosting Seattle. I don't trust them going to Green Bay, and that's in December, so it'll be lovely.
I think they're going to steal one of those games they shouldn't win too. Yeah, I'm high on the Eagles. I said they'd win yesterday, didn't I? But
yes.
I didn't give you the
and what a ledge we walked.
But
saying that they would beat the New York Football Giants at home.
I didn't give you the lock because I didn't like the 4.5 number.
You know,
I just didn't like it. I didn't like the 4.5.
It's you're not walking the ledge when the ledge is 75 feet wide and you're right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. If you give me good odds, if you give me really good odds, which is the penance I have to pay is not that severe, and the penance you pay is exponentially more severe, I will take the over on 9.5 losses to win the NFC East.
You're taking the over.
I will. No. If the odds of the bet reflect that,
what
I'm the one taking a chance.
I don't even know what that means, reflect. Explain yourself, please.
It's far more likely that a division winner, given that 100% of NFL division winners have lost 9 or fewer games.
Oh, you want odds. That's what you're trying to say.
Yes.
I want odds.
I'm not asking for odds in, we're not betting money. We're not putting cash
down. I know, but you want something bigger.
Right.
You want something more. because you think it's more likely to happen.
You need to shave your head like Road Warrior Animal.
No, I'm not doing. You guys all want me to shave my head. I told you, you can't shave the head. If you shave the head, the hair doesn't grow back
it's
the
not
same
growing
way.
Back anyway.
No, we've had listeners text the line saying, once you shave it, it doesn't grow back the same way. Nobody believed that. And then we've had our listeners go through that experience. They know. So I'm not doing any shaving.
Donovan Bailey, the great Donovan Bailey, wants to weigh in on Michael, you, and your unwillingness to step up in a key moment.
He's just a chicken. He's afraid to lose.
You're a chicken. You're afraid to lose.
I've actually gone to Donovan Bailey's house in Montego Bay, Jamaica. He has like a huge compound up the hill on the bay in Montego Bay. Yeah, my buddy knows him. My buddy lives in Jamaica as well. And I mean, it's a small world out there. You know?
I was going to say, did you go to Jamaica for a vacation? And your buddy reached out to Donovan and said, hey, can we come by? Or was the purpose of the trip, was Donovan hosting an event or a party or some kind of thing? Or like,
no, I just, my buddy, so my buddy lives in Montego Bay and he's Canadian. But yeah, I used to go down every once in a while and hang out. And then one day he's like, oh, we're, you know, I've gone for lunch and dinner with Donovan before.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you know, Negril, been up to Negril.
Who among us hasn't?
No, it's, and then he's just like, hey, come by the pad and, you know, we'll hang out for a bit, have a couple drinks. He's got like a nice, awesome place. He rents it out, actually.
Is it overlooking the water? Is it overlooking the water?
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah, it's a nice, it's like kind of open concept. He's got a nice pool. It's up on the hillside overlooking Montego Bay. You see the cruise ships coming in. You see, you know, you see that whole bay area with the yacht club and stuff. So, yeah, I've gone to Donovan Bailey's house. Nice guy. Loves talking about, you know, the races he's won and stuff. So,
if it wasn't,
you can, like, kind of go back.
I'll put this out there as I think a matter of fact. If it wasn't for Donovan Bailey, Adam Van Cooverden, Rob Zaminer and John Tavares, I would have been the best athlete ever to come out of Oakville.
Rob Zaminer, he's a great guy.
He was a good player, man. He was good.
Yeah, he was good.
He was a good player.
I got to play against him actually in the minors. It was like it was end of his contract. He was in Boston playing for he was playing for Providence. I was playing for Lowell. I was 20 and I can remember him beating me on a draw and he's a kid. You got to be better than that. I'm old and washed up. You got to be better than that. But I met him before, right? And we had a good chuckle after the game and we chatted. But yeah, Rob Zaminer, great guy. But yeah, Donovan Bailey, yeah, lives in, you know, he's in Jamaica a lot. So no, he, great guy, Donovan.
I just, you know? I love your stories because it's a be.
I know.
I went to Donovan Bailey's house in Montego Bay. Oh yeah, I went to the most remote region of a relatively remote country, Costa Rica, and I sat up at the bar one night, and there was Drew Barrymore, 19 deep, two seats over.
That's crazy. Like, I know. Well, she had her kids. Well, the Drew Barrymore thing was I have seen more celebrities show up there. So the whole crazy part about the Costa Rica thing is that it's in the jungle. Like, there's no roads. It's dirt. The rainy season, like the streets flood, very remote. Like Costa Rica is pretty off the beaten path, but then like this area is just jungle. It's called a blue zone. And more people have come up, like Mel Gibson apparently bought 50 acres on the water, like a couple hours away. And you hear all the locals talk about fishing stories with him. And then Danny DeVito's been spotted like no shoes walking down the street. So he started to go down there. So I've heard stories of celebrities kind of coming in, but I mean, I started going to this place, you know, 6-7 years ago. I couldn't find places to eat at times. Restaurants weren't open. Like,
so how did you find out about it? Like, how did it come?
I had some friend that would go down there for for these. It's a big yoga retreat spot. The area is called Nosara, and the area of the beach is Playa Guiones. That's the name of the one beach area, and you know, a couple of the main streets. And they would go down for these yoga retreats, and it's blowing. It's huge now, right? But it's also one of the best surf spots. And I got into surfing a little bit when I stopped playing. And you have a little bit of everything, right? They have, you know, the tougher, more expert kind of stuff. And they have, you know, you can kind of come in closer to shore and do beginner surfing. So you've got a little bit of everything. It's very consistent. The water's great. It's a beach break. You don't have to worry about rocks. Not a sharky area, so you're not worried about sharks. The only thing you got to worry about is the gators. You got to be really careful around, you know, the river mouth opening, so you got to keep an eye out for gators. Besides for that, it's great.
Can those things move?
The gators?
Yeah, like if they
alligators.
If they get a sniff that's what I mean. Yeah, if they get a sniff of your foot within range, can they move quickly and get at you?
The good thing about gators is they're at the top of the water. So I've seen a couple of them, but they're at the top.
Okay, so they're not hovering.
The sharks, you got to worry. The sharks are what you like. They come from underneath, right? You got to be kind of careful. But, anyways, yeah. So this Costa Rica place, it's a big yoga spot, and then I got into the surfing a little bit, and then, it's a fun spot. But yeah, the celebrities are they know they go to where the best spots are that a lot of people don't go and. It's starting to get bigger. When you start seeing Drew Barrymore and Danny DeVito and who's the other actor I saw out surfing a couple times? Christian Bale?
Batman.
I don't know him. So I wouldn't know him if you saw him start.
You would only recognize him if he was wearing his Batman suit.
Yes, exactly. He was not wearing his Batman suit in the water.
Surfing, I mean, if Batman is surfing, then it's like, holy crap, that's known. Christian Bale. But
yeah, I would have known. But
regular Christian Bale, it's...
Yeah, you don't know. I mean, Drew Barrymore, I knew who that was. That was very... Well, she was running around this like little taco shop that no one cared. She's like running around. Like no one knew who she was. I think I was the only person in this place who knew who she was, and she's trying to like make all this commotion because nobody was coming up to her, and you know what celebrities are like, right?
I have no
idea. You're a celebrity yourself, right? When no one comes up to you and asks you for your autograph, Scotty.
Oh yeah,
you get upset, don't you?
It's not an autograph anymore; it's a selfie now, right? It's snap that photo, and that has happened to me all but once in my 20 years in this business. How many times has that happened to you, Hugh? That's happened to you a lot more because you did a lot of TV.
But people come up and ask for pictures and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Not so much anymore.
Oh. Okay.
So no one knows who the hell I am anymore. Then I have to explain that I used to be somebody, and then they go, oh, really? And then exactly. A lot of that. And then they just kind of walk away bewildered going, who was that idiot?
I feel like a therapy session is underway here.
You know what the worst thing is when somebody does recognize you, and then they call one of their friends over to say, hey, you know who this guy is? And their friend goes,
no,
I have no idea.
No idea.
That's happened to me. That's happened to me dozens of times.
Oh, yeah.
And it hurts is all I'm saying. Yeah.
The NHL has officially canceled the Winter Classic, which was scheduled for Minnesota. And the All-Star Game in Florida.
Let me tell you right now. The players are upset how everything's going, but they are fist pumping the All-Star game getting canceled.
Well, although if
they are having a party, I know.
If there's a destination for the All-Star game, Sunburn, that would be it.
Nashville is pretty good.
Yeah, you want to go somewhere hot. You want to get away, and I think they should do. I think they should do it in like not an NHL rink, like some offsite, like go out to the Bahamas or go out to Hawaii, like do something. Like I think they should do a crazy All-Star game destination. That's just I don't know. That's me.
And if they do, we should go
Mexico City,
like maybe Donovan Bailey's house in Jamaica.
Yeah, we should do it in Jamaica. I don't know if there's a rink in Jamaica. Actually, I don't know if there's a hockey. Yeah, I'm going to look into that today, actually. That's what I'm going to do with my Friday. I'm going to figure out if there's a hockey rink.
That's an investigation that should take all of 2.5 minutes. You probably need to plot out how you're going to spend the rest of your day.
Is there an ice rink in Jamaica? Yeah. Nope. Okay, all the rest of my day.
Wikipedia. Wikipedia don't lie. Mark Shapiro.
That's a busy Friday.
Jesus, Murphy. Can't wait to hear what your Saturday and Sunday is going to entail. Jeez. Oh. Oh, I don't know how something so unfunny became so funny, but it did. Mark Shapiro was on Tim and Sid yesterday. He says the Blue Jays, of course, want to play in Toronto next year, but there are no guarantees. We just don't know where things are going to be with COVID. And, well, it doesn't sound like Penn is firmly on paper for a new Mark Shapiro contract. It feels like a fait accompli. And how about, as badly as the Blue Jays were defensively this season, there was one spot where they were nicely covered. Lourdes Gurriel Jr., their left fielder, has been nominated for a Gold Glove Award. We got a jam-packed show. Alex Anthopoulos, the president of baseball operations for the Atlanta Braves, off of their National League Championship Series loss to the LA Dodgers earlier this week. He will join us at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. We'll talk a little bit about his team, but also about the state of the game. Elliot Friedman is usually our guest on Friday mornings at 8. He will join us at 8:30. Dan Schulman at 7:30, and a football half hour for you at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. Charles Davis of the NFL on CBS, and then Steve Rapp of Sports Interaction and Inside the Lines here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. He will be along with his three picks for NFL Week 7. You've heard Hugh's voice. He's ready to burrow the lead, and we'll do it next. Davis at the top of the hour. Dan Schulman, Alex Anthopoulos, Elliot Friedman all ahead. And we want to give you, or at least attempt to give you, $100 in Nantucket gift cards when we play All or Nothing in about 17 minutes' time. It's time to burl the lead with you.
Good morning, fellas. Happy Friday to you.
Friday.
Maybe Friday. The Eagles got past the Giants 22-21 in the Thursday nighter in a battle of two very bad football teams. The Eagles take over top spot in the NFC East 2-4-1. Well, the G-men fall to 1-6. I can barely get that out. It's so funny. How bad are the Giants? Well, this sums up their season nicely.
Shotgun formation. Jones fakes it. Now he runs. He's got a huge hole. 25-30. And there he goes. Daniel Jones. The 15, he could not get there, running out of gas. Jones had nothing but green grass in front of him, and that typifies what this has been all about. He is down at the 8.
Oh man, nothing but open real estate in front of him, and he falls down. So Daniel, what happened?
Yeah, I just try to run faster than I was running and got caught up. So we finished the drive, scored a touchdown. So that was a relief to me for sure.
So we were actually having a conversation about this a couple of weeks back after work. And I asked you guys, when's the last time you ran full out in a sprint as fast as you possibly can? Because for me, it's been about like 35 years. And
is that in a football game?
No, I was running from the cops. It's a long story. But running on...
So the cops showed up at your football game?
Exactly, yeah.
Did you get away?
Briefly.
Well, he's here.
Yeah, I'm here. No, but I mean, so there was this thing a couple of years back at University of Toronto. It was put on by BioSteel, and they ran us through a bunch of different... Were you there?
No, but it was a media day.
Yeah, it was a media day kind of thing. And one of the things was like the 40-yard dash. And I hadn't run full out in, like I say, like a couple of decades. It's tough to run full out. Well, maybe because I'm 79 years old, but it's tough to run in a straight line full out on like artificial turf. But you pointed out before we came on the air, Daniel Jones is a professional athlete. This is incredible. He just tripped.
He just fell down.
He fell down.
They,
go boom.
They clocked him faster than Lamar Jackson ever.
Really?
Yeah. 21 miles an hour, like 21 something. He's faster than Lamar. Run yesterday. I don't know. I have to see how that gets done and how they figure that out. But I have a hard time believing Daniel Jones is faster than Lamar Jackson. No?
Well, Lamar Jackson is more a lot of side-to-side stuff. I don't know how fast he is. Like,
no, he's fast.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he is.
He runs, he's quick.
Yeah.
This is, give me an idea.
Okay. Oh, geez.
No, I'm not doing it. I already said I'm not doing anything. I'm not running. My hip flexors.
He's afraid to lose.
I'll even give you home field advantage if you want. Either Oakville Trafalgar High School, which would be my high school alma mater, or Father Michael McGivney up in Markham.
I don't know if we have a track.
Not a track. We run the length of the football field, goal post to goal post. 100 yards.
110.
I think it's, it might be 110, but I think it's 100 yards.
Oof.
Are you down
100?
For that?
100? I'll do 40.
Let's do 40.
40 yards.
No.
I used to run track.
100 is not good. 100's not going to be good for the body.
Because you'll be Daniel Jones? 80
I
yards
might
in?
Trip and fall.
Time you with a calendar.
I might. Yeah. Honestly, I think tripping and falling is not that big. It's funny to watch yesterday and we got a huge kick out of it and we're going to talk about it all morning, but it's not that strange to fall.
It's not.
When you're 6'5 and you're running that fast, I don't think falling is... I think that happens when you're 6'5".
Well, if you watch the replay, he got out over his skis, right? Like he started leaning forward and forward and forward and then just lost his balance.
Yeah, he was going way too fast for him.
And there is nothing worse than when you know it.
Yeah.
He knew it though.
I'm going down.
But he knew he was going down. Like he tried to catch himself 4 or 5 strides before he fell. Like he didn't toe pick and fall. He knew he was on the way down. 4 or 5 strides before. Let's watch the replay.
At least we'll always have the butt fumble as the worst thing that's ever happened to a New York-based quarterback.
Yeah, this would have been a close second, though.
Imagine he fell and lost the ball.
Yeah.
That would have been Patrick Stephon.
Yeah, or they didn't score on...
Yeah, if they didn't score,
Yeah, but they did, so it's not quite as bad. COVID concerns surrounding the Raiders have moved their game against the Bucs from Sunday night back to the afternoon. Cards and Seahawks take over the primetime slot. Speaking of the Seahawks, they're apparently interested in troubled receiver Antonio Brown, whose suspension for violating the league's conduct policy is almost up. Hawks quarterback Russell Wilson says AB is a different guy now.
I think Antonio definitely has taken those steps in the process. And like I said, nobody's perfect. You know, from the conversations I've had with him, he's really been remorseful and just he's been humbled, you know, along the way. You know, I really, and like I said, I pray that, you know, he can continue to grow just like anybody, you know, and, you know, all the stuff I'm not into that, you know what I mean, in terms of knowing, you know, I wasn't there or anything, that process, you know, that part of it. But knowing, you know, what I know of him and the times I've been around him, and that, you know, I try not to judge people.
Brown has had a number of off-field transgressions, including an ongoing sexual assault investigation.
But Russell Wilson wasn't there, so it's hard to know.
Yeah.
That stuff's got to be settled before.
Yeah, it's ongoing, so I mean, who knows when, right? But it looks like the Seahawks have opened the door for this guy. Okay, that's a bit of a head-scratcher.
Yeah, that's like, I don't... I mean,
but hey, it's the NFL. He sure can catch a ball, can't he?
Like, I don't agree with what Russell Wilson just all that. Like, no. I don't like any of that. But the thing is, what's Russell Wilson is supposed to say? Yeah, he's a bad guy, terrible thing. He's got all these issues off the field. He's in courts. People are suing him.
Yeah, it's a tough position for Wilson.
I don't know. If Russell Wilson doesn't back him there, there's no chance they take him. They don't take him if he doesn't come out.
Like, no, but all he's got to say is a complete non-answer. If that's where you want to go with it, it's look. I understand that there are serious allegations here, and
I'm hoping that he's remorseful and that he can turn his life around. The Bills have lost 2 straight, but they should be able to right the ship Sunday when they play the 0-6 Jets. Yeesh. Buffalo receiver Cole Beasley was on writer's block yesterday, said their game against the Chiefs, which they lost, proves they can play with anybody.
They just made two or three more plays than us. You know, that's really what it comes down to. And that's kind of the NFL, you know, in general. So, and you know, any team can beat any team on any given day. I don't care what the record is. So you always got to come with your best game. If you don't execute, you're going to lose. And, you know, they executed better than we did. But, you know, we're right there. We're not far. And it showed us some things that we need to improve on. So it's really not about any other team. It's more about us than them. If we do what we're supposed to do and we execute how we know how, we have the talent to beat anyone.
Bills are okay. The Bills are a good football team, but I don't think they're a very good football team yet.
Yeah, well, if you're looking at the best teams in football, right, Kansas City, even though they've got a loss on them, would be at the top of the list, defending Super Bowl champs.
Pittsburgh looks really good.
Pittsburgh looks really good. Baltimore is up near the top. Seattle Tennessee. Has some issues defensively, but Russell Wilson seems to make up for it every week. Tennessee, they're not in that class. If I'm looking for a comparison, I would say they're not in the class of the teams we just listed, and they're slightly ahead of a team like the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, yeah.
For example.
I think they make the playoffs, probably finish 10-6,
well, remember,
maybe 11-5.
There's an extra wild card spot, right? So you don't have to necessarily win the division.
Yeah, so they should get in, though. Game 3 of the World Series goes tonight. Dodgers and Rays all knotted up at onesies. Walker Buehler for the Dodgers, Charlie Morton for the Rays, 8 o'clock, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The Gold Glove nominations were handed out yesterday. A Blue Jays in the running for one. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. for American League left fielder. Lourdes' first baseman brother, Yuli, one of three Astros nominated. Good for them. Meantime, Blue Jays president Mark Shapiro was on Tim and Sid last night. He was asked where the team needs to improve next season.
We have two very clear areas of need to improve, and that is our defense and strike throwing. However, if you look back at the history of even Hall of Fame players, defense is one area that does improve as players settle in and mature. There is just some natural transition where, so I think the natural progression and development of our players at the major league level will help some of that defense. In addition, we probably need to add or supplement some players. There are multiple ways we can go about doing that.
Shapiro also saying that if he had his druthers, of course he wants to play here in Toronto next year, but that's out of his hands.
Yeah, that's going to, I think, depend mostly on how the U.S. handles the COVID-19 situation through the winter, and because our border's not reopening anytime soon.
No, it doesn't look like it. One final question for you gentlemen on this Friday morning.
Friday.
Where were you guys 27 years ago today when this happened?
Here's the pitch on the way. A swing and a belt. Left field. Way back. Blue Jays win it. The Blue Jays are World Series champions as Joe Carter hits a three-run home run in the ninth inning, and the Blue Jays have repeated as World Series champions. Touch them all, Joe. You'll never hit a bigger home run in your life.
It's one of the greatest calls in sports broadcasting, at least in my very humble opinion, the great Tom Cheek. So, where were you?
Well, it's funny. I texted my mom yesterday, and I asked her to do a little diving into some old artifacts lying around the house, and she found my ticket stub. Nice. I was at the game. So I was sitting in section 113B, row 34, seat 111.
Nice.
So I was down the right field line in foul territory.
Yep.
And just a few rows back was the section that was holding the Phillies fans contingent, whether it was family members of players or whatever.
Players' wives and girlfriends.
And so I'm 14 years old. Wives and girlfriends.
Some had both.
So I'm 14 years old. The Carter home run is more or less a line drive. And so the trajectory of it with, I'm looking toward the third base side of the field, I lose the baseball.
Yeah.
You can't see it among, with people in the background, white shirts, different things. So my reaction was when we saw the people over there leap up and throw their arms up and start celebrating, we all went nuts. The other thing, you know, the red, white, and blue bunting that goes around the facades of each level
that they put up in the playoffs.
Yeah. That got pulled down, and people started with their Swiss Army knives cutting little sections off.
Back in the days where you could bring a Swiss Army knife into a ballpark.
Yeah, which
game.
I was going to say, how did people get Swiss Army knives into the ballpark? Oh, yeah, it's 1993. Yeah. So I didn't have a Swiss Army knife at 14 years old, so I thought that my bottom braces could serve as a scissor for the bunting. That wasn't good because I ripped the bottom braces off of my four front bottom teeth. So I was at the orthodontist 2 days later getting that fixed.
Just gnawing on it like
some other guy, though, who did have a Swiss Army knife was kind enough to cut a little bit of the bunting, and I still have it.
That's great. Oh. Ziggy, where were you?
Watching on TV. Like, I wasn't lucky enough to go to the game like Scotty. But I do remember. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of those moments you do remember as a kid. And yeah, just exciting time in the city, right?
It was incredible. Yeah.
They were winning World Series. It was, you know, they had a great team, exciting team. I remember going to games throughout the year, but yeah, just a huge moment in Toronto sports. One of the biggest, if not the biggest.
People, I mean, it's a strange debate when you talk about the biggest home run hit in Blue Jays history. To me, it's a no-brainer. It's Joe Carter. It's the Alomar home run was great. The Bautista bat flip home run was great. This is a home run to win the World Series.
It's only been two ever.
This, no question, is the biggest home run in Blue Jays history.
It's the biggest.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Hugh.
Yeah.
Biggest one.
27 years ago tonight.
Yep.
Where does the
I still
time
had hair
go?
Back then.
Was it? It was falling out though.
Yeah,
comb over hair, or was, hair like you put product in it, because there's two different kinds of hair,
right? I
put
product in it like in college when I had lots of hair. Then when I got here for work, it was barely hanging off.
Cue ball time. 416-870-0590. 416-870-0590. We're looking for a contestant to play All or Nothing. We've got $100 in Untuckit gift cards to give away. All or Nothing is three true or false questions. We'll throw them at you if you call. Next. All right, we've had a pretty good week in All or Nothing. Three true or false questions. Get them all right. Get them all wrong. If you get the first one wrong, that's fine. Stay on the line. You just got to get questions 2 and 3 intentionally incorrect. We are on a 3-game winning streak. Let's keep it going with Zach in Alliston. Good morning, Zach.
Good morning, boys. How we doing?
We're good, and we'll be even better if you win. So Ziggy's got question number 1 for you, true or false.
Game 3 of the World Series goes tonight. The Dodgers' Corey Seager and the Rays' Randy Arozarena are the postseason co-leaders with 7 home runs. Is that true or false?
That's false.
It is true.
It is true, yeah. Seager and Arozarena have both hit 7 home runs, and that is tied for the most this postseason. That's okay, Zach. You just got to work counterintuitively now. Get the next 2 intentionally wrong.
All right, Zach Master Flash. Former Cowboys wide receiver Dez Bryant is expected to head to the AFC North Division. And right now, the reported favorite to land him are the Pittsburgh Steelers. Is that true or is that false? Get it wrong.
That's true.
Good job.
That's the sound you want to hear now. You want to hear the negative buzzers.
It's actually, the reported favorites are Ziggy's team this week, the Baltimore Ravens.
Right, so the answer was false. You said true. You keep going. You want to get this one wrong. When Joe Carter, 27 years ago tonight, hit the World Series winning home run off of the Phillies' Mitch Williams, the Blue Jays were trailing by a run. When Carter hit the home run, the Blue Jays were trailing by a run. True or false? Get it wrong.
That's false.
Woo! Beautiful.
Zach Master Flash.
Yeah, the Blue Jays were trailing by a run.
That's how you do it.
Zach with all the confidence in the world.
Oh, yeah. No doubter.
Congratulations to Zach and Alliston. You are getting $100 in Nantucket gift cards, and we will attempt to give away $100 in Nantucket gift cards when we play All or Nothing at this time on Monday morning. Charles Davis of the NFL on CBS, week 7 of the NFL. Could he pull a Daniel Jones? And we'll get into some of the big games this weekend as well. Charles coming up. There's this giant inflatable Borat floating around in the harbor.
I can see, if I stand on my roof, I can see it from Scarborough.
I can see Russia from my house. We need a giant Ziggy floating in the Toronto harbor.
They do. Just one big head. That's it.
If we threw a giant Ziggy in the lake, I bet it would float all the way to Rochester.
Oh, yeah. It would gravitate towards Rochester. Is that gravitate? That's probably not the word to use,
no,
but you know what I mean.
It works.
You know what I mean.
Oh.
It's across the water. You know that, eh? It's on the south side of the lake.
Rochester, New York? Yeah.
Well, not directly on the lake like Toronto. It's half hour from the lake south, but yeah. You get what I'm saying.
There's a nice 3 or 4 weeks in July and early August in Rochester. I have no doubt about it. I'm sure the snow begun, though. I mean, because why wouldn't it? We are into week 7 of the NFL already, and what a thriller we had last night in Philadelphia between the Giants and the Eagles. The NFC East crown is just going to be hotly contested right to the end. The Daniel Jones trip, when he had nothing but end zone in front of him, is the gif and the video that's taken all the attention away. But it was a big win for the Eagles, nonetheless. Some big games this weekend as well. And to discuss all of it, our good friend from the NFL on CBS, he will be calling, and this is a good one in the AFC, the Steelers and Titans from Nashville. Charles Davis is with us. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. It's good to hear your voices. And I love the early conversation. You know, Rochester, New York. I grew up in New York State. So when I hear Rochester, I get excited about that. And Daniel Jones, I went back and pulled out my scouting report that I had on him prior to the draft and underlined like 3 times I have the words underrated athlete. I may have to change that after him tripping and falling in the open field like that. That was unbelievable. And I really think, truthfully, guys, we're going to laugh and we're going to have a great time with it, and he's going to have to laugh about it. Otherwise, he was going to be upset the rest of his life. But it really absolutely encapsulated the NFC East race. That play right there told us about the NFC East in 2020. No question.
I'll say this, though, Charles. I mean, it also encapsulates the state of the New York Football Giants. From Daniel Jones's perspective, at least Mark Sanchez and the butt fumble will probably never be topped for New York-based quarterback screw-ups. Right?
True.
Like, I mean,
absolutely true. But you know what the Jets fans are saying right now? Thank goodness now we have something to put next to it. You know, the Jets fans have had to deal with it. Like, you know, here it is. And the Giants fans have just been, ha, 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 look at that, the butt fumble. Well, now at least the Jets fans can go, yeah, now we got the trip in the open field. The only thing that would have made that thing absolutely just totally just paid it off is if the Giants hadn't scored. You know, because when he tripped and he fell in the open field, they had to run more plays. Tell the truth, did we not all think to ourselves, oh, God, now if they don't score at all, like if they don't get a touchdown here, this is really going to turn into something. But somehow they're able to do that. He could sheepishly come to the sidelines. Everybody could yuck it up and laugh and, you know, give him a little bit of dap. But imagine if he'd, like, thrown an interception in the end zone or somehow they fumbled it again, didn't score. That would have totally finished the whole thing off.
Yeah, that, I mean, yesterday's game, I mean, I don't know what to think of, you know, the Giants or the Eagles, NFC East at all, but I do want to ask you about the Cowboys and what's gone on there and players, you know, coming out to the media and honestly talking to reporters and, you know, sharing their, you know, opinions about how the coaching staff's not prepared and, you know, they're just not good enough. How much does that kind of stuff surprise you when players come out like that in the media?
Surprises me not at all, frankly, because they've come out and they haven't owned it. You know, it's been the leak through the media, through the anonymous part, you know, keep my confidence on this and I'll tell you a few things. I just don't think that, you know, there's really no surprise there, especially considering the kind of year that they're having where they're extremely disappointed. They thought they were going to be pretty darn good. And let's face it, a good number of people picked the Cowboys to be very good this year. So you throw it all together. that part does not surprise me. Well, it always surprised me a little bit when a guy comes out and says, you know, and stands up at a press conference and says, hey, my coach is horrible. The coaches here are terrible. We're doing a lousy job. They're doing a lousy job, et cetera. That's when I get surprised. This one where it's an anonymous sources didn't surprise me one bit.
So where does it go from here for the Cowboys, Charles? I mean, Andy Dalton is under center for the rest of the year as long as he stays healthy.
Yeah.
Ezekiel Elliott is one of the best running backs in the NFL, but, you know, until we see otherwise, it appears as though he's in his own head a little bit and has developed a bit of the yips and is fumbling the football. He was benched the other day as a result of that. And, of course, needless to say, the defense is a complete and total sieve. Do you think Dallas can put this together such that they win the division? And as a follow-up to that, can you settle something for Ziggy and I? Are we potentially going to see the first division winner in NFL history with 10 losses?
Let's start with the last part. Because it was interesting, you know, in watching the game and listening to Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, Troy mentioned trying to find the wins for whoever is going to win the division. And the way he said it and talked about it, 10 losses, he's like, it is hard to find. I think, you know, and I'm paraphrasing a little because I can't get it directly, but he said something to the effect of, it is hard to find some way that someone's going to get to 8 wins and get to 500. So anything below 500, we're pressing 10 losses, aren't we? You know, just 2 games away from getting to 10 losses. So I think that there is an absolute possibility of that. I know that I'm trying my best not to just, you know, go off the edge with it because it's real easy to do, and typically we get fooled a little bit and someone gets hot and finds a way. But I'm going to say 8-8 as my starting point and hope that it gets a little bit better than that. But this is one year where, for once, I am not taking 10 losses out off the table.
Well, the reason
it is bad there. It's bad when you. I mean, what did we watch last night? You know, I'm watching the game because it's my job. Frankly, you know, I'm flying, and you know, the game's on, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm glad it's on because the alternative is just bad too. So this is okay. But then I'm watching and going, no, it's not okay. This is really, really bad. And someone's going to go to the playoffs. And this time I think it's going to be a team below 500, wins the division. We're going to scream and yell about it and really be justified. I don't think anyone who wins this division is a real threat to win a playoff game.
No. Well, part of the reason I say it, Charles, aside from just how bad these teams are, is that their divisions that they play are the NFC West. I know the Eagles beat the 49ers, but like the Cowboys are playing the Rams and the Niners and the Seahawks and the Cardinals. That's the division in the NFC they're playing this year. And then in the AFC, they've got the Steelers, the Ravens, and the Browns. You know, like they're in the AFC North.
It's a bad year. yeah, that's a bad year for how they ended up with the divisions. Little did we know, right? Because remember when the Cowboys and Rams played right out of the gate? I think we all expected the Cowboys to actually go out there and win.
Yep.
You know, I think we thought, hey, wow, what an upset for the Rams on opening night. We had no idea that they were just kind of setting the table for what we were going to see down the road. So, yeah, it's a mess. Now, the Cowboys, they still have the opportunity to, quote-unquote, get right because of what they have offensively. Being able to utilize those receivers, I don't think Zeke will stay as the fumbling Zeke that we've seen. I think that he will get better. But the offensive line is a shell of its former self. So that's a problem right there. They can't just say, okay, let's just go back and rely and do it the way we used to. Beat people up in the run game, protect Andy Dalton, whatever. They have to be a little more wide open like that. And the defense does get a small pass because for all of their issues, the offense has put them in some bad spots. But the defense has never really made a play that you've gone, oh, my goodness. You know, if the offense would help them, they'd be so much better. And by the way, reinstating Randy Gregory is not going to turn around their season. All right, I'm just gonna put it on the table. the question will be, will Randy Gregory be able to finish the season himself? Because he has been in and out of the lineup, unfortunately. And I don't say this with any glee. I don't say this like I'm pointing a finger at his issues. It's just that if you're always counting on guys who are in and out of trouble and unable to complete, you know, the mission, like, you know, always if you're always relying on Josh Gordon, just going to be disappointed all the time. And I always hope for them to prove me wrong. That's my number one goal. Please let Josh Gordon prove me wrong with another comeback. Please let Randy Gregory prove me wrong with another comeback. But I don't believe that they will. I just don't know that they're able to. And that's just because they are dealing with diseases. They're dealing with real issues. It is hard to do. But when teams are saying, hey, we're going to bring him back and we're going to be better, you're crazy. That's just not going to work out that way. That rarely works that way.
Charles Davis is our guest from the NFL on CBS. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The Buffalo Bills have lost the last two games against two really good teams. Charles, is there alarm bells going off for this team, or do you just write them off saying, you know what, we play against the Titans undefeated, the Chiefs can do pretty much beat you so many different ways? Or is this one of those things where, or does the schedule have anything to do with it? Is, you know, they've won every week that they've been scheduled, and then they lose the two games that have had changes to their season. Does any of that play a part?
I think it plays a part. I think you also have to look at it too. Remember that Rams game? You remember the controversial ending of that one? They were very close to losing that one at home. Remember, you know, the call or two away from that. I don't ring alarm bells. I still think this is a good Buffalo team, but I think that we'd better examine the division a little bit closer. See, I would have told you 2 weeks ago, listen, they got to take care of New England, and if they do that, they're home free. Okay, they're going to win those. If they can beat New England twice, because New England is much more dealing with the head of, meaning we've never beat New England. Right? And again, in that division, who has over the last 20 years? But this was the year to handle New England. Well, the Dolphins, you know, they made the move with two and all that, but they just won two in a row. We're actually playing pretty well. So I don't think they're an easy out, whether it's Tua or Fitz. I think that's going to be a tougher deal now. The Jets, I think, are a disaster, so they should handle that. But that's what I'm looking at now. Okay, will you handle what you need to within your division? And, yeah, the schedule is tough. Those teams are difficult. I'm not writing them off for that at all. I'm not saying, okay, they're faked out. They're not. It's still a good football team, but I'm looking at the New England games with renewed interest. And I'll let you in on a little secret. I get to see the first one next week, so I'm very excited about that.
Wow. Mm. Look at you. You're getting some good games. Yeah, and you're gonna have
pretty lucky, aren't I?
Yeah, you got a sweet gig, and you get to work with Ian Eagle, so you're gonna get to hear all about the Daniel Jones stuff because he was calling that last night.
He was there. He saw it live. I can't wait,
Charles. We're with Charles Davis. There are some teams that have gotten off to good starts, but then who tripped a little bit, I guess, to play on the Daniel Jones line, who tripped over themselves last week. I'm thinking of specifically Green Bay, who did not perform well at all in Tampa Bay. And the Rams went to San Francisco and got beaten on Sunday Night Football by an injured 49ers team. Is that just a blip because those things happen over a 16-game season when you play once a week? Or did we learn some things about those two teams that may have reinforced some doubts about those teams that we saw from last year?
Well, both of them have a chance to prove that we can stop it right here and play right into exactly what you laid out in the beginning. There are going to be blips, right? That's why we rarely get, you know, undefeated throughout and rarely get one and two lost teams. They will happen. Let's examine Green Bay very quickly, right? Off to the great start. Now you get the most anticipated game, one of the most anticipated games of the weekend because it's Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, and they haven't had a chance to play very often over the years because of the divisions, the conferences, et cetera. And, oh, yeah, Thursday night before, Tampa Bay had lost a game that they had a very good chance of winning in Chicago. They're at home. They're going to redouble efforts. They came out, got it done in a big way. Then you look at the Rams going to San Francisco. You talk about the defending NFC champs. They may be beat up and all, playing at home, haven't won a home game, backs literally against the wall in this one, and they get their starting quarterback back, who played much better in that ballgame than he did in the previous one when he had been hurt. So they were in one of those positions where it's almost you ran into a buzzsaw. Now, going forward, let's see if both of those teams get back on track and they prove that they're there. To me, the Rams are a bigger question mark only for this reason. Going into the season, remember what we said just a little bit ago? Did we really expect the Rams to be true contenders in the West, or did we think that they were a team that we were wondering which way it was going to go? Green Bay we saw as being true contenders in the NFC North because of their season last year. So Green Bay, less of a surprise. The Rams, more of one. Now they got to get back on track, and I think the Rams have a much better opportunity of doing that only because after that type of a game, going and playing Nick Foles and the Bears don't typically run away from you offensively. So your defense can stay in the ball game as well, and you have one of those kind of slugfest type of games.
Right, yeah, and I would say this, and typically you don't disparage a 5-1 team, but there's just a lot of skepticism around the Bears. The Rams at home on Monday night against Chicago, that's a game you cannot lose. And then on the flip side of the coin, if you're Chicago and you win that game and you go to 6-1, all of a sudden, winning in L.A., you start to command more attention and some respect. Charles, we'll
think about it. Yeah, think about it very quickly.
Yeah.
Beat Tampa, right, on a Thursday night special on a night that you're all alone playing. Mm-hmm. Now you got a Monday night that you're all alone playing, and you beat the Rams. Yeah, you're exactly right. The respect level starts to climb. And we don't just say, well, the Bears just find a way. Now you start to say, hey, this might be a pretty darn good football team. And Nick Foles is totally cemented as your quarterback. You're right about that.
Ben, you're calling the 5-0 Steelers at the 5-0 Titans for the NFL on CBS. You got a sweet gig this weekend, every weekend, but especially this weekend. Should be a great one. We'll look forward to talking next Friday, Charles, as we always do. Thanks, pal.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. And maybe if you guys teach Daniel Jones how to skate, he won't fall in the open field. That'll work out a little bit better.
Scotty's is a great skater. I'm sure he's got a couple tips for him.
Yeah, yeah. There'll be a toe pick or two. There'll be a toe pick or two. Like Daniel Jones runs like I skate. Charles Davis of the NFL on CBS, and he's with us at 7 o'clock each and every Friday morning. Steve Rapp is one of the hosts of Inside the Lines here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You can listen Sundays at 10 a.m. Get you set for the action in the NFL on the weekend ahead, and he is with Sports Interaction as well. Steve is here to make his three picks for leadoff. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm surprised nobody threw the flag on the 10-yard line for tripping Daniel Jones last night, but the guy will be...
I saw a sniper. There's a sniper up there.
Was there a sniper? 2 minute warning. You remember that movie, 2 minute warning with Jack? Yeah. That guy was a good fresh reference. 1-2 last week, guys, but my two losses were so bad it should have counted as 10.
There you
Green
go.
Bay, Green Bay and Dallas.
15 yard penalty on the turf monster, and we're calling shenanigans last week. So let's get back on the horse this week, Steve. And we got an AFC North matchup in Southern Ohio. We got the Browns at 4-2, a field goal favorite at the Bengals.
Yeah, Scotty, I think we're getting value on both sides of the equation here. So I'm gonna go back to the Cleveland Browns to bounce back in this battle of Ohio. Sports Interaction opened this line Browns -4.5. Early professional money is sided with the Bengals to my benefit, and the line now sits at 3, as you mentioned. The last time we saw these teams, Cleveland was getting manhandled by the Steelers. Bengals just missed the upset of the Colts. You're never as good as bad or never as good or as bad as you looked, and the reality here for both teams is probably somewhere in the middle, guys. As we saw last week, Baker doesn't like pressure, but that won't be a problem this week. While Pittsburgh ranked number one in pressuring the passer, the Bengals ranked 29th. I usually like taking points in a division at home. Forget about that this year. As I mentioned last week, those rules are out the window so far this year. The Browns average 27 points per game. That is with last week's effort against the Steelers factored in. Revenge game here for the Browns, who gave up 35 and a loss to Cincinnati in week 2. But like I said, the Browns average 27 points a game. I don't think Cincinnati can keep up with no offensive line and Joe Burrow running for his life. I'm taking the Browns -3 here.
All right. I think this is game of the weekend. Pittsburgh Steelers at Tennessee Titans. Both teams undefeated. Tennessee favored by 1, though. Who do you like?
Yeah, this is going to be a great game. And like I said, 2-5-0 teams meet. This matchup originally scheduled for week 4. It's been rescheduled due to the COVID. The home Titans opened as a small 1-point favorite, Mike. But we've had seen a pros and Joes matchup here with the Sharps on the Titans. The public solidly behind the Steelers, as they're always want to be. It keeps this number where it is now. Titans -1. I'm going to be on the public side here. The Titans winning, but they maybe should buy a lottery ticket as well. They have snatched victory from the beat against Denver, Jacksonville, and Minnesota. Shouldn't have beaten Houston. Got 3 turnovers and 3 short scoring drives of 25 yards or less versus the Bills. Due to all the COVID rescheduling, this will be their 3rd game in 12 days. And all the luck the Titans have had has got to turn at some points. The Steelers have the number 2 defense in the league, the number 1 defense against the rush, exactly what you need against Derrick Henry. Tannehill has been good, but let's see what happens when they take away his best weapon, as they should, in Henry, and I'll take Steelers +1.
All right, and this is scheduled now to be the Sunday night game, Steve. There's a slight chance it could revert back, but there's a COVID concern with the Las Vegas Raiders offensive line, so the Bucs and the Raiders move back to Sunday afternoon. The Seahawks at the Cardinals in the NFC West, now the Sunday night game, Seattle on the road, 3.5-point favorites.
Yeah, I think the plan here was they did not want to leave. If they had to move this game to Monday, the Vegas Tampa Bay to Monday, they didn't want to be left with no game for the Sunday night primetime. So that's what we've been seeing with this move. And undefeated Seattle opened as a 3-20 favorite in Arizona. And that line has been pushed to 3.5 behind a pretty good public push on the Seahawks. There has been some professional groups on Arizona. I think we might see 3 by Sunday here. I think this game line's going to come down a bit. And I'm going to fade the public here. If you watch football over the last decade or so, it'll seem like the Cardinals always do well in this matchup. You would be right. Arizona's covered 7 of the last 10, and the dog has prevailed 9 of the last 10. Next to Tennessee, Seattle might have the flukiest of 5-0 records. They have 1 win against a team that doesn't have a losing record, that being Miami. They rank dead last in the league in total defense. Russell Wilson, he's always going to be a problem, always going to scare me when you bet against him. And I know they're coming off that bye, but I don't think their resume deserves being more than a field goal favorite in this matchup against the Arizona team, playing pretty well. 6-1-2 their last 9, 3-1-2 their last 6 against the division. I'm taking Arizona +3.5.
Good to hear your voice, Steve. We'll check in on your picks next week, and we'll have 3 new fresh ones for week 8. Look forward to listening Sunday morning at 10 o'clock.
Have a great weekend, guys.
That's Steve Rapp of Sports Interaction Inside the Lines with George Russick, David Bastel, Steve Rapp, 10 o'clock Sunday morning right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Dan Schulman on the World Series. He's with us next. The worst pulp culture reference guy in the history of the world.
Have you seen Reservoir Dogs?
Oh, God, long time ago, yeah. Tarantino, baby.
And this comes on in gruesome scene.
Yes.
But every time this comes on, I don't know why that pops in my head. And he dance, you know, the little dance? I forget the name of the actor, whoever that is, but it's just that dance in this song. I don't know why every time.
See, I was letting it breathe because I love the song, but yeah, I was also thinking of all the rich, famous people's homes that you just crash. I mean, if it's not Donovan Bailey, you're in the Maldives, you're bumping into Drew Barrymore on a bar stool in the middle of nowhere in Costa Rica. It's like, it's quite a charmed life you lead.
I don't know. Yeah, it's...
You posted a random photo on your Insta story yesterday from this gorgeous waterfall. Like,
You know where that was?
I thought you never leave your house.
Like,
Where were you?
Like, literally, I was getting a little, you know what I mean? Just some cabin fever here.
Stir crazy. Okay.
Yeah. It's Dundas Peak. There's, like, a little hiking trail. You go to the... I mean... I got all decked out to go on like this big hike in like Dundas Peak. I'm going to be scaling this tall escarpment on Niagara. It's near Hamilton.
Oh yeah, I mean, because it's pretty much Mount Everest out in the escarpment, right?
I expected something a little bit more tougher to hike, like a tougher hike, something a little bit more you know, I was looking for a workout. And it was like a kilometer and a half. Now, I'm sure it's a tough hike for many. It's just I was expecting something bigger. And I mean, it was gorgeous, right? Fall colors are out. You have a little bit of, you have a waterfall there. It's gorgeous.
Alex Anthopoulos, the GM, president of baseball operations for the Atlanta Braves at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. And Elliot Friedman will be along at 8:30. Now we go down to, I believe, Bristol, Connecticut, where he is remotely calling the World Series alongside Jessica Mendoza and Chris Singleton. Dan Schulman is with us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're good. Have you ever said Walker Buehler's day on?
No.
Or are you too are you too professional for a stupid line like that?
Come on, man.
Hey, no. That's not bad, is it? Or is
it's
it awful?
Not good. Yeah, no. And I love the movie. Like, you know, I am the perfect age when that movie came out, I was probably 17 years old. Like, I'm right in the wheelhouse for that movie. And I probably haven't watched it start to finish in 20 years. I may today, actually. But even if I watch it today, I'm not going to say that on the air. I can promise you that.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. You're too professional. So here's suddenly a 2020 hot take, Dan, that would have just been absurd to even suggest as something crazy 10 years ago. I think we're going to get at least 5 innings out of both starting pitchers tonight.
You know what's funny? I did a game, whatever game it was in the last round, the Rays playing the Astros. I can't remember. It was, I think, Framber Valdez against maybe Charlie Morton, something like, I can't remember. And both starters went 6 innings. And in game, I was like, wow, that feels pretty rare. So I texted somebody who provides us with like some in-game stuff, and she wrote back in 30 seconds. And my question was, how many games in the playoffs have there been this year where each starter's gone six innings? And she wrote back in about 30 seconds. She goes, this is the third. Now, there have been, remember, eight series in the wild card round, then four division, two league championship, and this was the third. The answer a generation ago would have been all of them, whatever the number was, you know. Everybody would have gone six innings. So I'm hoping tonight that we may have a little friendly pool off air about over-under pitchers in the game, and I'm hoping it's a single digit between the two teams because these two guys are good, and I know the game is played differently, and the toothpaste is out of the tube on that. It's not going back, but it would be nice to see these guys get relatively deep into the game.
Who do you like more, Morton or Buehler tonight?
It's a great question because, so let's start with Buehler. Unbelievable stuff. And like, you know, big game pedigree, he's done it before, had an incredible game in the World Series a couple of years ago, the only game where they beat the Red Sox. He's legit. Now, he's been battling a blister, which has shortened his outings a little bit recently. He's had some time off now, so we'll see about that. But Charlie Morton's got more big game experience than probably just about any active pitcher. It's all 5 to 5 2/3 innings, but he's never given up more than one run. I think he's pitched in 5 winner take all games between wild card games, game fives and game sevens, and he has been nails in all 5 of them. So if I had to pick one, I think I'm picking Morton. That having been said, the Dodgers have a better lineup than the Rays, but I think I would pick Charlie Morton just because he's done it so many times before.
With Dan Schulman, this is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Have you learned anything or changed or enhanced your views on any particular player on either of these teams? And you can go in whatever direction you want, Dan. Like, we've had the Trout Betts conversation in terms of who's best. We've had the Corey Seager could have been in Cleveland, had the Lindor trade with Los Angeles actually gone through. We've had the, is Randy Arozarena gonna be a guy for years and years and years, over 162 games after this playoff breakout? What stood out to you in terms of individual performance?
And all good questions, all good topics that you had. So I want to wait and see on 162 for Arozarena. I think he is going to be a guy. Is he going to be a star? I don't know yet. Like, I think it was J.D. Bunkus, like, was just going nuts about 5-6 days ago at the peak of Arozarena fever. And I said, like, hang on. Like, I think it was J.D., not Ben, was saying, you know, if you're starting a team, he's one of the top 5. And I said, whoa. Like, again, maybe I'm just old, but I said, we got to pump the brakes just a little bit on that, because right away, you're going, you know, like Trout and Betts are the first two that you think about, and then you're going Soto, Acuna, and Tatis. Like, you're at 5 like that. So I think he is going to be a good player, but let's see if he's going to be a star. For the Dodgers, even though, let's talk about Mookie Betts, even though he was a Red Sox player for so many years, which means all of us saw him so many times, I just marvel at his ability to win a game in different ways. You know, we throw around, you guys have probably had this conversation, the 5-tool player. Like, Mike Trout's an incredible player. He's not a 5-tool player. He's got a below-average arm, and the metrics on his defense this year were below average. Mookie Betts can win a game with his power, can win a game with a base hit, can win a game with his speed, which he kind of did in game one, can win a game with his glove, which he's done a couple of times, can win a game with his arm, which he did a few times during the regular season. I don't know if I'm ready to say he's a better player than Mike Trout, but he's definitely right there in the conversation. He's definitely more of a 5-tool player. He's an all-world guy, too. And I know when you play for the Red Sox, nobody in Toronto wants to like you, but, I mean, he's everything. He's everything you want in a player, and he's, if he's not the best player, he's 1-1A right now, I think, with Mike Trout.
If this series goes deep, 6-7 games, who do you think has the advantage, Dan?
I actually think it's Tampa Bay for a couple of reasons. So if there's a game 7, it's probably a rematch of Morton and Buehler. And again, for the same reasons that we talk about tonight, I give a slight advantage to the Rays in a game 7 because Morton's had all that experience. And if they have to throw the kitchen sink at you out of the bullpen, they got guys. Their guys, I think, are a little bit better than the Dodgers guys if you're talking about the top-end relievers. And game 6... looks like a bullpen game for the Dodgers. And I don't love the way that they've used their pitching staff in the playoffs, but game six looks like a repeat of game two, not in terms of result, but in terms of the Dodgers would have a bullpen game. So if I'm the Dodgers, I want to win it fast. And not necessarily that I need to win it fast, but I think the Dodgers' best advantage is if they can really get going in the next few games. If the Rays win tonight, I think we're in for a long series. If the Dodgers win tonight, then I worry about the Dodgers maybe winning it in five. But, you know, the Rays are really good. And again, as Toronto people, we know this. We see them. This is not a fluke. They went 40-20. They won 96 games last year. They're not as good as the Dodgers, but they're really good. So the longer this one goes, the more I like the Rays.
Is the Clayton Kershaw October reputation narrative unfair? I've always felt, Dan, that it is. And yeah. and I take you back to the Mattingly years when he managed the team. I don't lay this at Don Mattingly's feet, by the way. It was just he was managing the team at the time. Their bullpen, outside of Kenley's two or three years of complete dominance, their bullpen has always lacked. And so Mattingly would ask Kershaw to begin the fourth time through. And pitch number 110 is never going to be as effective as pitch number one. You know, Verlander maybe every now and then, but not with most guys. I just always thought they never had the guys to pick Kershaw up, and so he would pitch deeper into games, and that's when bad things would happen.
Yep, I think that there's a lot to that, and I have never really had any time for the Clayton Kershaw can't win, or like to even use the choke word for a guy like Clayton Kershaw to me is so disrespectful to him. We're talking about, without question, one of the 10 best starting pitchers in baseball history, like without question, who has meant so much to the game. There were definitely times, as you said, where they didn't have a bridge guy to get them to Jansen, so he was great through six and he got hit in the seventh. There were times where I'm convinced, now we're going back a few years, the Cardinals had his signs and got to him once or twice. One of his starts where he got clobbered was against Houston in the 2017 playoffs. Who knows what was going on, right? There were times where he came out of the bullpen on 2 days rest. Well, last year when he pitched against Washington, right, coming out of the bullpen. So he has not been as good as he's been in the regular season. I'm not saying that, but I don't think he's been as bad as the narrative makes it out to be. And I hope that what he did in game one of the playoffs was enough to put it to rest, no matter what happens going forward. And the way I felt coming in, guys, like I'm neutral, I call the game. So like if people say, who do you think is going to win? I don't answer that question, but I've always said, I've said about the last week, I don't care who wins, but I hope he pitches well. He deserves to pitch well. He deserves to have the narrative change. And if they lose, I hope it's not because of him. And he was fantastic in game one. He really was. But you look at his numbers. It's funny. The narrative even on him doing poorly this year was there before the last start. And he had an ERA of 3.22 in three starts. He struck out 13 Brewers in the first round of the playoffs, was really good again, pretty good against San Diego in the second round, was great through five innings against Atlanta in the third round, and then got knocked around a little bit in the sixth and got left in one batter too long. So he gave up one more earned run than he should have, and then he just locked it down and in game one. And I was glad Dave Roberts took him out when he did. Once it got to 8-1, I think it was, you know, get him out there on a high note. Not that it's in his head, but save his pitches, get him out there on a high note with a great performance under his belt. So, yeah, I'm with you, Scotty. I don't really have much time for the narrative either.
With Dan Schulman, last one for you. And, like, I try to pride myself on knowing our station's history. I grew up listening to the Fan 590. Remind me of where you were 27 years ago tonight when Joe Carter walked it off against the Phillies. You must have been in the stadium. Were you doing the post-game show? Were you hosting primetime at that time? Like, where were you in your career, and were you at the game? I imagine you were.
In my career, I was doing primetime sports at the time, and I was doing Jays Talk. It was just called Jays Talk then, not Blue Jays Talk. It was called Jays Talk, and so Scott Ferguson would have been doing the post-game show, which was called Baseball Today, and then I did Jays Talk from the lobby of the hotel. We would do it on weekends. We would do it live from the lobby of the hotel, and in the playoffs, we did it live from the lobby of the hotel. And some people have heard this story before, but I was so in-game, I didn't have any responsibilities. I had pre-game responsibilities on primetime and post-game on Jays Talk. So I bought tickets. The club was nice enough to help me, and I bought a pair of tickets, and I was sitting kind of down the right field line. And when the game went to the bottom of the ninth with the Phillies winning 6-5, I left my seat to go start making my way to the lobby of the hotel to do the show. And I was in an elevator when he hit the home run, when Joe Carter hit the home run. So and I knew either one of two things had happened. Either somebody had gotten a World Series winning hit, or we were having an earthquake magnitude 8. And I know we're not on any fault lines that big. So I didn't see it. I was in an elevator, and the earth shook. And when I got out of the elevator, they had won the World Series.
Great story. Great story. And unbelievably, 27 years ago. No idea where the time has gone. Thanks for this, Dan. Continue to enjoy calling the World Series. We'll be listening, and we'll chat next week.
Okay, guys. Thanks. Have a good one.
Dan Shulman calling the World Series for ESPN Radio alongside Jessica Mendoza and Chris Singleton. And those games you can hear right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Alex Anthopoulos, president of baseball operations at the Atlanta Braves, at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. What you watching with Hugh next? Alex Anthopoulos and Elliot Friedman next hour. Hugh is back in the studio.
Hello.
This is always good on a Friday. What you watching? Because we got options.
Yeah. Well, of course, there's game 3 tonight of the World Series. 8 o'clock, Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan for you. Let's go to the big game of the week, though, in the NFL. It is the Steelers at the Titans, both these teams 5-0. And before I ask you who you got, let me just point out that the Titans have won games this year by 2 points, 3 points, 1 point, and they had to go to overtime last week. While for the Steelers, their smallest margin of victory is 5. I like the Steelers in this one, even though it's on the road. Who you got?
So do I. There's just something about the Pittsburgh Steelers, as I called them, I think earlier this week, a bellwether franchise in the NFL. Every now and then you'll get a 7-9 season out of them, but most of the time they're in the playoffs. They're steady as they go.
You know what you don't get? You don't get a 3-13 season out of these guys, or 4-12.
No, you don't. And 3 head coaches since 1969, Noel, Cower, and now Tomlin's been there for more than a decade.
It's amazing. Ziggy, who you got?
I got Tennessee, guys. Sorry, I got to go the other way.
Yeah, you like them at home, huh?
Yeah, I just think they've dealt with a lot, right? They haven't been able to practice. They come out and win. I mean, I think that's tough to deal with, all the COVID stuff. So they're tough to play against. I you're watching them. They can beat you a number of different ways. And I mean, best matchup of the week by far.
Okay. So we'll leave it at this. Is this a Ziggy lock, or is this, I've just got the Titans?
This is, I got the Titans.
Yeah. What's I'm sorry. What's that, Donovan Bailey?
He's a chicken. He's afraid to lose.
Yeah. What's that, Donovan Bailey?
Yeah.
He's just a chicken. He's afraid to lose.
You want my Ziggy locks? I'll give them to you at the end.
Next hour. Next hour. We'll get you in the studio at 8:45.
All right.
And we'll do the Ziggy locks. A huge hour. Anthopoulos, Friedman, Ziggy locks. One of these things is not like the other two. You decide. Anthopoulos next. Alex Anthopoulos in just a couple of minutes. I'm still reeling, Ziggy, from Dan Shulman's reaction. Now, Silent Vic's going to find the clip, and we'll play it a little bit later on in the hour, but I'm still reeling from Dan Shulman's outright rejection of my Walker Buehler's day on line.
Okay.
I didn't think it was that bad. It's probably into dad joke territory, but Dan Shulman is a dad. Like, I thought it was pretty good.
It was all right.
Do you think if I said that to Drew Barrymore,
everything comes back to Drew Barrymore, everything.
At a random bar in the middle of nowhere, Costa Rica, it would have gotten a laugh out of her. Somebody.
Yeah, maybe she'd laugh.
Listen to Dan Shulman's outright. This is how quick Silent Vic is. He finds this stuff. Listen to the outright rejection of what I thought was a pretty good line. Have you ever said Walker Buehler's day on? Or are you too professional for a stupid line like that?
Come on, man.
I got come on, man. Hey, no. That's not bad, is it? Or is
it
awful?
It's not good.
Shulman's too nice a guy. It's not good.
It's honestly funny. Nice one.
That was so dismissive.
How about that? How about this one?
So...
How about this is you yesterday?
Yeah.
There it is.
I have to say, you play that laugh again. I think that was a fake laugh. I think whatever you were talking about, I think I was humoring you. I think I've been outed as a fake laugher. I've never laughed like that in my life. I've been outed as a fake laugher.
How about Ross Tucker's laugh last night for Daniel Jones?
Oh my God,
that
Daniel
was like.
Jones.
I mean, when you're doing color, you have to kind of hold it together. I've done some color on radio, so when I would sit out games in the minors or I was ever hurt, I would always go up because our radio play-by-play guy, I would always go up and do color with him during the games because I'd get my workout in. That was it. And I was like, you know what? I kind of joked around with him one day. I'm like, yeah, I'm injured. He's like, yeah, you should come up to the booth. And I actually did go up for... a couple minutes, and I got off. He's like, hey, I'd love to have you on. We want to do the whole game. And I said, sure. So every time I got hurt when I was in the minors in Lowell, I would go up and do as many of the games as I could on radio.
That's where the addiction begins. And look,
yeah,
now you've joined.
If we could get those tapes, goodness. If you think this is bad, wait till then.
You're full time on the dark side now. You got a taste of it and you couldn't get enough. Elliot Friedman later this hour. He is the president of baseball operations with the Atlanta Braves. They had a nice run through the National League playoffs, ending up, of course, losing to the Dodgers in 7 games. And Dodgers now taking on the Rays in the World Series. Alex Anthopoulos is taking some time to join us this morning. Good morning, Alex. How are things going?
Back to normal life, I guess. Obviously, we went in the bubble, I believe, September 23rd.
Yeah,
and obviously, just until I'm trying to think, the days all kind of blend together. So I think Sunday was our last game. So drove back with my family on Monday, about 11-hour drive, and got stuck in 2 hours of traffic. But the biggest thing is just being back home, being able to eat on a plate with utensils and silverware, and you're eating out of boxes the entire time, and plastic cutlery and things like that. So getting back to a normal existence is kind of nice, but obviously it stings. But you obviously turn the page and have to get ready for 21.
Well, Alex, we watch the games on TV and we don't think about what you or Brian Snicker, your manager, the coaching staff, the players are going through the 21 other hours of the day. You talked about eating off of or out of boxes and with plastic cutlery. What generally was life like in the bubble? Were you able to be entertained? Was it a reasonable experience?
Yeah, you know what? I think initially I said, you know what? This isn't all that bad. You know, we're in a nice hotel and hotel ballpark. But then after a while, it starts to grate on you a little bit because you're there every day. You can't leave. You can't go anywhere else. And obviously, the longer it goes, there's just not a whole lot to do. Now, they did a good job because families were able to go if they wanted to quarantine as well. And they tried to do some things at the hotel. They'd have a family room and things like that. But you're basically on site. You're at the hotel, and from there you're getting on a bus and going to the ballpark, and that is it. You're basically on lockdown. So depending on where you're staying and what options they have, and even some of the hotels, is not maybe a lot of areas where you can go walk around or do certain things. So they tried. They did everything that they could. You know, and even eventually for those people that have traveled a lot in the past, You get sick of eating out all the time or eating room service or things. And look, these are high-class problems in the grand scheme of things, so I'm certainly not complaining. But, you know, the longer it goes, the more of a grind it becomes. And, you know, beyond the stress of the games and all those other things, just knowing that you're really confined to a few areas.
Your team made a great run this year in the playoffs and, you know, tough series against the Dodgers. But what did you see out of your guys maybe that, you know, surprised you, some stuff you liked from your team that maybe you didn't know you had before?
You know, I guess I would, you take away all kinds of things. You know, you lose in the playoffs and some, like in 2018, we weren't even expected to win the division or get in the playoffs at all. And you know, we faced the Dodgers at that point and they just steamrolled us, you know, 3-1. But, you know, that was just, we were happy to be there. This year and last year, we were good enough, we felt like, to at least get to the World Series. And at that point, anybody can win. So I think it was the same kind of thing. When you lose in the playoffs, you look back and you can't overreact in my mind unless there's really a systemic problem of your base running or your hitting or your bullpen and that you need to go address. I think people can overreact when they get to the offseason just based on a playoff series. I'd say the biggest takeaway for me, we have a lot of individual stories and great things that happen and so on, was and I've been part of, you know, there's only one team that wins at the end of this. So, you know, for the most part, the odds are you're going to be upset at the end of it. But our clubhouse was probably as emotional a clubhouse as I've seen after we lost. It reminded me actually of 2015 with the Jays, because that was, we thought was a really, really good team and certainly capable of getting to the World Series and not, you know, being able to win it. But some of the guys that have been around a long time and been on a lot of other teams, and this was the part I was most excited about, said it's the best clubhouse they've ever been in. And look, I understand when you're winning, you're likely to have a good clubhouse because things are going well. But you know, that's the one thing I feel like there's no reason for us to get that part wrong as a front office. We can make mistakes on guys being healthy, guys performing, but if we do enough work, we should be able to get 26 guys, 28 guys for the playoff run that really come together as a team. And you know, I debate this all the time: makeup, clubhouse, fit. You need talent, of course. And I always kind of waver every offseason. It's like the forbidden fruit. You're trying to, are you going to, you know, cut corners? But I was proud of that. And I do think it helps you at the end of the day in terms of wins.
With Alex Anthopoulos, the president of baseball operations of the Atlanta Braves, this is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's well documented and it's out there publicly. And Freddie Freeman has talked about his experience suffering from COVID-19. He returns, Alex, and then puts up essentially MVP numbers, right? I mean, an 1100 OPS, a 186 OPS plus, like his peripheral statistics are through the roof. He had a brilliant season for you guys. Because it's out there, I feel I can ask you this and you can probably give me an answer. You would have known day by day how Freddie was doing as he was suffering from COVID. How worried were you through that process about him?
Yeah, so I'm free to talk about all the guys that contracted COVID and so on. What we did was, and it was a lot of great when guys were, you know, you weren't allowed to disclose without the permission of the player. And I think everyone knew if a guy was on the IL or wasn't showing up, the media would see and everyone would put two and two together. So we just talked to our players as it happened and said, look, we can make it uncomfortable for the manager and the organization and people are going to speculate and know what's going on. Or we could just be honest about it. And hopefully it helps to educate everybody, specifically in Atlanta, obviously across the South and so on. And, you know, we did things like, even when I did my Zoom interviews, I wore a mask, not because I needed to wear a mask in that room, just the thought of being able to promote it. And, you know, I know when Freddie Freeman came back, he did the same thing, and we encouraged just to do our part. But so I stayed in contact with him the entire time. For probably 2 days, it was really bad. Now part of it was he was so anxious to get back. He's, you know, he's the type of guy who plays through anything. When he had a fever and so on, he was just trying to grind through it. And it's like, this is not a normal injury that you just grind through and fight through and you're going to be fine. And you're going to be back on the field soon. So, my concern, I knew he was ultimately going to be fine from talking to our doctors, healthy and so on. My concern that he was just going to call me and say, look, I'm not doing this. I can't, I just went through this. I'm not doing this again. This whole thing is tough. He certainly doesn't need to do it from a financial perspective, and that he was going to opt out. But I was pretty confident. I wasn't worried about his long-term health. But it was scary for a 24 to 48 hours.
With Alex Anthopoulos, there is a conversation that sports fans love to have? And it's a pure hypothetical. It goes somewhat along the lines of this. If you could win the World Series 1 year, but then you dive back into a rebuild, i.e. you win the World Series, but you're not a sustainable franchise in terms of year-over-year-over-year success, would you take that as a fan, or would you take 10 to 12 to 14 years of sustainability with no World Series championship, but ultimately you're in it every year? So you don't know that you're not going to win at the end of the day each and every year, but you're in it every year. I think most people would take the sustainability because it's better to cheer for a perennial winner, I think, than a team that maybe wins it once but doesn't come close to winning it again. How do you go about, Alex, building a sustainable winner? Is it identifying a core and then supplementing it? Because one of the things that you have done, other teams have done it too, I thought you did a really nice job finding the one-year deals, the Josh Donaldsons last year, the Marcelo Zunas this year. You have your core and then you supplement it. How do you go about, or how have your views evolved on the construction of a sustainably successful franchise?
Yeah, that's a great question. To this day, I still debate it at times. Look, obviously the goal is to win the World Series. I guess there's a few ways to really go after this. If you could guarantee me we'll win a World Series, especially if you're in a position that hasn't won in a long time, guaranteed, you could bank it, it's there, I'm winning the World Series. Yep. If you tell me, and I think that's the whole thought of the whole notion of going all in, I'm totally against the going all in. And even, you know, the thought of Toronto going all in. I mean, before 2015, we were offered, Greg Holland and Roberto Osuna and Travis were guys that, you know, we were going to have to go back there. And there were some other players that we had needs, that we could have traded for and so on. Because you're still trying to be competitive year in and year out. Being a sports fan, especially now with young kids, and my 8-year-old son is getting into the sports teams in Atlanta as well, you realize you need something to watch, and you realize how quickly you lose interest. There isn't anything to watch, and your team's not contending. It's tough. And, you need sports as an outlet. And if you don't have an exciting product and something to watch and root for and cheer for, it's tough, especially in baseball. It's a long summer, and it's a terrible environment in the clubhouse as well when you lose. So guaranteed World Series, I'm taking that plunge. That's the biggest issue when you're looking at all these trade deadlines and so on is, you know, you think you might do that, but things happen in the playoffs. I mean, just, you know, bad breaks, bounces, guys get hurt and so on. And if you're going to really push the gas pedal to do that, and, you know, you're going to really feel it for the next 4 or 5 years, I think that's a real challenge. So, you know, I think, you know, 4-year plans, 5-year plans, all that kind of stuff, I don't think anyone's good enough to do that. I think you just have to continue to make good baseball decisions. You know, and you can still, I think, look, I know there's been successes with the Astros and the Cubs and so on. They did an unbelievable job. They also had significant resources from a payroll standpoint, but, you know, I think those are the exceptions to the rule that those were successful. I think you have teams like the Oakland A's, they never rebuild. Even Tampa, they never rebuild. They're always trying to be competitive. And I think if you look at it as strictly trying to make good baseball decisions, good baseball moves, you should be able to be competitive and contending. And, yeah, at the trade deadline, you're certainly going to want to help your club. But I would want to try to keep that window open as long as you can. I mean, it's been 6 years for me with obviously 3 clubs now, Toronto, LA, and Atlanta, that we won the division. And I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back to long summers and sitting there at the end of the year and having to address your employees, you know, the whole organization, why you didn't make the playoffs. You realize how many people are relying on the baseball operations group to put a good team on the field.
Yeah, you're with the Dodgers 2016 and 17. When you see the success they're having this year, do you kind of, you know, say, well, you know, I kind of helped build what they have right now? And I don't want to say there's some kind of satisfaction, but everybody wants to, you know, leave an organization better, you know, than they found it when they got there. Is there any kind of feelings when you watch them play here in the World Series?
You know, it's been my 3rd year here in Atlanta. I view it as they were successful before I got there. They were going to be. I see how that organization is run and what they're doing. They're going to be successful for a long period of time. I feel like I certainly, you know, did what I could and I contributed and I was all in. And move there, and I was, you know, everything I had to that organization to help us win, and was certainly involved in a lot of the things there. But, you know, I view it as, hey, what did I learn? What did I take from it? And, you know, they've won the division 8 years in a row, and it's hard to do, as we all know. You know, we've done it 3 in a row, and I want to keep that string going. I want to know that we're going to get back to the playoffs year in and year out. So playing them, I know I have a lot of friends there. My wife and kids, and I know a lot of the families there as well. It was a little weird. You're both staying at the same hotel, and you see some people early at the beginning, and you're thinking someone's going to leave unhappy and so on. But, you know, beyond that, I did make tremendous friendships, relationships, and I do. If they're not playing us, I want to see them do well, and I want to see them win. So, you know, I view it more. I've talked about it a lot. It was an unbelievable experience for me, and I got better. There's no doubt about it. I learned from it, and you know, I think if you're not getting better in these jobs, something's wrong to begin with.
With Alex Anthopoulos, this is a question that will probably require an answer that takes longer than the time that we have, but I'll throw it at you anyway and see where you go with it. What is the future of starting pitching in Major League Baseball?
Yeah, I know that's been debated the last 2 years or so, especially with, you know, more common openers and so on. I think everyone would rather have starters and guys going deep and not wearing out bullpens. As we all know, bullpens are the most volatile area. They're hard to make predictions on, consistency from year to year and so on. And those clubs that have good starters, they use those starters. So I think what happens is, especially in the playoffs, you're not, you know, in my mind, you're not looking at it as I need this starter, that starter. I need 27 outs. I need to get outs, however you want to do it. And you can be more specific, especially in the past, you'd have more off days. Now, this was much more unique with no off days, and you're grinding through things and you really need depth. But you can cherry pick, hey, these, you know, you look at the lineup and 1 through 9 and, you know, hitters 5 to 7 or 1 to 3, or this reliever lines up pretty well. It's a string of righties, string of lefties. You know, this is who they have on the bench, but these guys struggle against sliders and so on, and let's use the guy with the slider in this area. And you could be more specific that way, but you certainly can't do that over 6 months. And, you know, you just manage in a totally different way. You're trying to get through 6 months. Certain guys are down on certain days. We are definitely more open in the postseason. Look, hey, guys, going 3 days in a row, if you need it, it's the playoffs. These are the most important games. During the season, you'll just say, look, I don't care if we lose tonight's game. So-and-so's down today. They're not going to pitch no matter what happens. And we do those things. We'll talk about it before the game. So I think if you're talented enough to start and go deep in the games, and I'm not as much of a slave to the third time through the order. I'm all for guys going third time through the order. I think there's an eye test to it. Yes, the numbers spike. Of course they do. But there's also times guys are throwing the ball well and their curveball sharp or their slider sharp, or their command is. I just view it as once you're third time through the order, you have a heightened awareness, but that doesn't automatically mean that you're pulling the guy out. You have to watch the game. If you're not going to watch the game, you don't need someone to manage. You'll just have a computer do it.
With Alex Anthopoulos, got to ask you about Mike Soroka and how his rehab from the torn Achilles is going. When, maybe early, but when do you think you'll be able to have him back in his opening day? At all a target?
Yeah, so we haven't placed a target, and that was something I talked to him about right away, strictly for this reason, that you set a target and all of a sudden he doesn't make it. All kinds of media distractions, it's a setback and so on. So obviously Mike is very young. We have him for a long time and hopefully an extremely long time. We have to make sure that we take care of him career-wise. And a lot of times when guys get hurt, go on the IL and so on, invariably there's always very rarely will a guy want to take more time. But you always, at some point it does reach a head where the player's dying to come back. They want to cut steps. They want to cut their rehab games. And I'm ready, I'm ready, I'm ready. And you have to fight back as a general manager, a manager. So Mike's the kind of guy that he's going to work hard. He's going to want to beat it. He's going to want to be back as soon as he can. But I talked to him about that very thing. So could he be back opening day? Sure, he could. If he had to be, I guarantee you he would be. I think it's just going to come down to is what is the right period of time. Similar to Tommy John, guys can come back at 11 months if you wanted them to, or 12 months. But sometimes we just give them a little more time. So I think with Mike, we're not planning on him being ready for opening day. I think we're just going to see where he's at when he gets to spring training. And the other thing is, from an inning standpoint as well, he'll be 2 years removed at that point from having pitched, you know, a lot of innings. we're going to have to be careful as well just to manage him over 6 months.
Thank you for doing this morning, Alex. We wish you well this off season and stay safe in these strange times. We'll talk again very soon, I hope.
All right, guys. Thanks for being on.
You bet. Alex Anthopoulos is the president of baseball operations for the Atlanta Braves. Mike Soroka, the Calgarian, the ace of the Atlanta staff. And you would wonder, if you get two starts out of Soroka in the NLCS, if he's there for you. You lost in seven to the Dodgers, had a 3-1 series lead. Could that have been the difference? I guess we'll never know. Elliot Friedman, you sat back. You knew, you could just see that I was dying with that sentence. You, how the, I am talking circles trying to get myself out of that thought. And you are sitting there just amused. I know. I know.
I love going dark and just leaving you at the mic. It's probably my favorite thing. I look forward to it. It doesn't happen often.
You just watch on FaceTime. How is he going to get himself out of this with words? I think I did an all right job. Damn it. And I'm good with Walker Buehler's day on, Dan Shulman. I'm good with
it's
that too.
It's growing on me.
It's growing on you.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a boil. Elliot Friedman next. I'm going right into it, Ziggy. I'm not wasting a moment. I'm going right to Elliot Friedman. I think he's. I don't know if he's thrilled with us. He got pushed out of his usual 8 o'clock Friday time slot. I don't know.
I was going to ask that this morning when I saw the shuffle of what's going on. I don't think he's going to be happy.
All right. Well, let's see. Elliot Friedman is with us from Hockey Night in Canada, the NHL on Sportsnet. When Mike Gentile, Silk Gentile, our producer, reached out to you, did you think you were going to get asked to come on earlier than 8 o'clock or later than 8 o'clock?
Does it really matter? I got bumped. What a total joke for Anthopoulos. What's he ever done? And he was eating during the interview. He wasn't even paying attention.
Because I remember when I would do radio hits early in the morning, Elliot, I was always nervous that I was going to hear from the producer the day before, the producer of the morning show, asking me to come on earlier. There was nothing that scared me more than that.
We have space
at
6:15.
I don't know if I would say it scares you. It's just like, you know, it's really disrespectful. I'm really hurt.
All right. Well, I apologize, and I hope you can find it in the depths of your heart to forgive me, to forgive us, really, because it was Ziggy's idea. So it was totally Ziggy's idea.
Yeah, I put the show together. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Before we get into the hockey talk, where were you 27 years ago tonight when Joe Carter walked it off?
I was in a friend's basement, and we were arguing about what a terrible clutch player Joe Carter was, and he never did anything important when it really mattered. He got all of his RBIs. All those years of 100 RBIs were like empty calorie RBIs when the score was 10-2 and it didn't matter. And he blasted it out of the park as we were continuing that conversation. And one of us destroyed a lamp, and our friend's mother never forgave us for that.
I want to get into the Blackhawks letter and what that means for the organization going forward and what's going to happen with Toews, Kane, and some of the decisions they have to make with their veteran leadership. Did they come out with this letter because of what Toews said, how he was shocked that this is going to be a rebuild now?
Yes, I think that had a lot to do with it. There's no question that Toews' reaction, Mike, made the Blackhawks act. If Jonathan Toews is going to come out and say that, it definitely gives license for your fans to say that. And they had to make sure that they did everything properly and explained what they did. They also had a Zoom meeting where Toews was there with Duncan Keith, Patrick Kane, and Brent Seabrook. Stan Bowman was on that call, and they, you know, kind of hammered it out with them too. You know, we have an interview dropping today on the podcast with Stan Bowman, and you know, one of the things he talked about was right now Danny Wirtz, who the owner of Rocky's son, is the president of the team, and he was in the bubble with the Blackhawks, and Bowman said that he felt that Danny Wirtz felt that the team had to be more transparent with its direction. So he said it was something they were considering even before Toews made his comments. But there's no question, once he said that, the captain said that, they knew they had to react.
Yeah, I'm just like generally confused, Elliot, by the need for all of it, because if you've watched the Blackhawks play for the last 3 or 4 years, as we all have, we know that they're in a transition phase, and they do have a lot of good young talent. So, I mean, it was, you got some, I suppose, cost prohibitive, easy for me to say, contracts with Toews making 8 figures, and Kane is still an elite player, but north of 30, he's making 8 figures. Like, there are some veterans on this team. The Seabrook contract is tough. But it was clear that they were moving in a different direction anyway, was it not?
Yes, but I think the thing that surprised Toews was the move in net, because they decided not to sign Corey Crawford. They'd taken a run at Matt Murray. They couldn't make a deal. Murray obviously got traded to Ottawa, where he signed an extension there. And then they tried to sign Corey Crawford, but they only offered him a 1-year deal. And then they let him go, and they made it clear that Malcolm Subban and Colin Delia was going to be the tandem. And that was, I think, what surprised Toews and a lot of other people. You know, simply because, I think it's way too early to give up on Malcolm Subban, for example, as a goaltender. You know, he's still got plenty of time to learn and improve, and this is going to be his best chance to play. But when you hear that, you're not thinking that, you're thinking, oh my goodness, like, we're not going to contend if this is our group right now. And I think that was kind of the cold water bath of shock, for lack of a better term. You know, Crawford, he was great for them in the return to play. He was excellent against Edmonton, and he was really good against Vegas in a series that they lost in 5 games. And, you know, I think that even though they were kind of changing their roster to begin with, Scott, when you make that decision in goal, that was, I think, a surprise to a lot of people.
Do you think you could see Toews or Kane asking to be moved?
No, I don't. You know, that's, you know, one of the challenges with Bowman is, because he did a few interviews before he was on with us, you know, you have to find a different tack. You have to be able to say, okay, I know you've been asked this. We've got to try to ask you this. And, you know, he said that he told people that he had the conversation with those guys. And I asked him for the podcast today, are you concerned at all that any of them are not going to buy in? That any of them are going to say, you know, I've thought about it, this isn't for me, and I'd like to go elsewhere. And he said that at this time, and I guess the key is at this time, he is not expecting that. And he added that if that changed, he would have to deal with it. But at this time, he's not expecting that. And from what I can tell, just in my own research, independent of what Bowman said, I believe that is the truth. I don't think Kane, well, Taze has made it clear he doesn't want to go anywhere. I don't think Kane wants to go anywhere. Keith at times has hinted that he would consider it, especially if the team is not trying to win. But I don't believe that this time that's the case. The one that's going to be challenging is Seabrook because, you know, if he's trying to get healthy and return to form. But if he doesn't, you know, that might be a bit of a question. However, in terms of him saying, I want out, they're not expecting that. And I don't think he wants to do that.
Elliot Friedman is with us from Hockey Night in Canada and the NHL on Sportsnet. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Are you surprised with some of the names that aren't signed and specifically a Mike Hoffman and where he's going to go?
I am. I mean, the guy's a 30-goal scorer. You know, Granlund, you know, I think he had 30 points last year, which is low for him, but he's a really talented player. But, you know, one thing we've seen is that the forward market, Mike, has cratered. The goalies got their deals. The top D got their deals. You know, other than that, you know, the forwards really haven't got their deals. I think there's four of them. Four UFAs have signed contracts over $3 million up front. I think it is. It's Taylor Hall, it's Tyler Toffoli, it's Evgeny Dadonov, and it's Craig Smith in Boston. Like forwards have gotten totally squeezed here, and you know, I think every dollar's tight. I think a lot of these teams, some of these teams have cash flow issues at the ownership level. You know, the cap is tight. There's a lot going on here. I mean, you look at what happened with the Mikheyev negotiation. You know, the Leafs came to him and said, this is the max we can do. And then they came back and they said, you know, we have to adjust that a little bit downwards. So, you know, all these teams, whether it's the 81.5 cap or an internal budget that they've got that's lower than the cap, they are squeezing pennies. And you know, some guys have been affected. Now, I think what happened is, like I think there are teams that have gone to guys like Granlund and Hoffman and said, oh, we're happy to sign you. All we can offer you is $3.5 million. And they're like, you know, I think I'm worth more than that. Now, I think what's happening right now is we're going through arbitration. You know, we'll see, you know, where some of these teams end up if they have an arbitration case. Do they walk away from that arbitration? Do they use a buyout with the buyout window you get after arbitration? So will we see some more signings after this is done? That's one scenario that's been presented to me. We'll see. The other thing is that some of these guys might say, look, I'm not underselling myself. Maybe I'll wait. I'll see when the season starts. I'll see what situations open up. And maybe one team will say, okay, you know, someone gets hurt or we really think we can win. We need this guy. You know, we'll figure it out then. And, you know, I think that that's kind of what's going on out there. You know, some guys will eventually reach a point where they say, oh, to hell with it. Just I'll sign. Let's go. But I think they are trying to see if they can, if something shakes loose on the market that gives them a better situation. That's kind of the read I'm getting out there.
Does Anthony Duclair have an agent yet? And the reason I'm asking this is because I didn't have an agent 1 year and the team just said, oh, just come on in. You don't need one and you can do it yourself. And that's not a good idea. And I don't suggest players do that.
Is that how you found your way to Rochester?
You know, I told you guys last week that I tried that too. And it's just not like I didn't like it. I took it it gets way too personal. And I wouldn't do it either. All I can tell you about Duclair is when Pierre Dorion revealed that Duclair was going at it alone, I reached out to him and he sent me a statement and I've tried to reach out to him since. And he said he would get back to me when the whole process was done. And, you know, I mean, I sent a note here and there, but generally I respect his position on it. So I'm kind of waiting to see where this process goes and when he'll decide he wants to chat again. So as far as I know right now, Mike, he still does not have an agent. He's doing this himself. I had heard there was some interest with Florida. I know another team told me at one point they expected him to sign there, which obviously hasn't happened. I don't know where that stands. But as far as I know, he's still representing himself.
Elliot, thank you for doing this. Thank you for apparently forgiving us, although we don't have confirmation on that, for pushing you back by a half an hour. And we tried to accommodate your ability to sleep in a little bit later by moving you to 8:30 instead of asking you to come on earlier. So I have a
9-year-old son. I don't get to sleep in much sleep past 8 o'clock, but I appreciate the thought. Thank you.
We'll reset this thing for 8 o'clock next week and look forward to talking to you. Thanks, pal.
Well, I'm taking a couple weeks off.
Well,
we'll chat in the future.
That's what you think.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we're calling.
We'll just pocket dial you and pretend.
I appreciate the honesty. I do.
Okay, enjoy the well-earned vacation, pal. We'll talk very soon.
All right, guys. Take care.
Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night in Canada, the NHL on Sportsnet, 31 Thoughts, the podcast with Jeff Merrick, the weekly column on sportsnet.ca. Ziggy took that interview over, and he probably made the decision to do that because he can tell that I'm really on this morning. Have you ever said Walker Buehler's day on?
No.
Or are you too are you too professional for a stupid line like that?
Come on, man.
Hey, no. That's not bad, is it? Or is
it's
it
not
awful?
Good.
I think that's when Ziggy realized.
Yeah, I'll take the rest. I got it the rest of the
he
way,
had
bud.
To,
it's
he
okay.
had to take, yeah.
It's Friday.
Come on,
I know it's
man.
Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on, man.
Yeah, I got come on, man, by Dan Shulman. He took like an ESPN patent and threw it right back at me. I got come on, man, by Dan Shulman. Oh, the heart breaks.
I got the picks coming, right?
We got Ziggy Locks. I mean, it was Anthopoulos. It was Friedman. Two big deals. But the biggest deal...
You want to hear these.
Coming up next with the Ziggy NFL locks for week 7. I'm going right into it, Ziggy. I'm not wasting a moment. I'm going right to Elliot Friedman. I think he's. I don't know if he's thrilled with us. He got pushed out of his usual 8 o'clock Friday time slot. I don't know.
I was going to ask that this morning when I saw the shuffle of what's going on. I don't think he's going to be happy.
All right. Well, let's see. Elliot Friedman is with us from Hockey Night in Canada, the NHL on Sportsnet. When Mike Gentile, Silk Gentile, our producer, reached out to you, did you think you were going to get asked to come on earlier than 8 o'clock or later than 8 o'clock?
Does it really matter? I got bumped. What a total joke for Anthopoulos. What's he ever done? And he was eating during the interview. He wasn't even paying attention.
Because I remember when I would do radio hits early in the morning, Elliot, I was always nervous that I was going to hear from the producer the day before, the producer of the morning show, asking me to come on earlier. There was nothing that scared me more than that.
We have space
at
6:15.
I don't know if I would say it scares you. It's just like, you know, it's really disrespectful. I'm really hurt.
All right. Well, I apologize, and I hope you can find it in the depths of your heart to forgive me, to forgive us, really, because it was Ziggy's idea. So it was totally Ziggy's idea.
Yeah, I put the show together. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Before we get into the hockey talk, where were you 27 years ago tonight when Joe Carter walked it off?
I was in a friend's basement, and we were arguing about what a terrible clutch player Joe Carter was, and he never did anything important when it really mattered. He got all of his RBIs, all those years of 100 RBIs were like empty calorie RBIs when the score was 10-2 and it didn't matter. And he blasted it out of the park as we were continuing that conversation. And one of us destroyed a lamp, and our friend's mother never forgave us for that.
I want to get into the Blackhawks letter and what that means for the organization going forward, and what's going to happen with Taze, Kane, and some of the decisions they have to make with their veteran leadership. Did they come out with this letter because of what Taze said, how he was shocked that this is going to be a rebuild now?
Yes, I think that had a lot to do with it. There's no question that Taze's reaction, Mike, made the Blackhawks act. If Jonathan Taze is going to come out and say that, it definitely gives license for your fans to say that. And they had to make sure that they did everything properly and explained what they did. They also had a Zoom meeting where Taves was there with Duncan Keith, Patrick Kane, and Brent Seabrook. Stan Bowman was on that call, and they, you know, kind of hammered it out with them too. You know, we have an interview dropping today on the podcast with Stan Bowman, and you know, one of the things he talked about was right now, Danny Wirtz, who the owner of Rocky's son, is the president of the team. And he was in the bubble with the Blackhawks. And Bowman said that he felt that Danny Wirtz felt that the team had to be more transparent with its direction. So he said it was something they were considering even before Taves made his comments. But there's no question, once he said that, the captain said that, they knew they had to react.
Yeah, I'm just like generally confused, Elliot, by the need for all of it, because if you've watched the Blackhawks play for the last 3 or 4 years, as we all have, we know that they're in a transition phase, and they do have a lot of good young talent. So, I mean, it was, you got some, I suppose, cost prohibitive, easy for me to say, contracts with Taves making 8 figures, and Kane is still an elite player, but north of 30, he's making 8 figures. Like, there are some veterans on this team. The Seabrook contract is tough, but it was clear that they were moving in a different direction anyway, was it not?
Yes, but I think the thing that surprised Taves was the move in net, because they decided not to sign Corey Crawford. They'd taken a run at Matt Murray. They couldn't make a deal. Murray obviously got traded to Ottawa, where he signed an extension there. And then they tried to sign Corey Crawford, but they only offered him a 1-year deal. And then they let him go, and they made it clear that Malcolm Subban and Colin Delia was going to be the tandem. And that was, I think, what surprised Taves and a lot of other people. You know, simply because, I think it's way too early to give up on Malcolm Subban, for example, as a goaltender. You know, he's still got plenty of time to learn and improve, and this is going to be his best chance to play. But when you hear that, you're not thinking that, you're thinking, oh my goodness, like, we're not going to contend if this is our group right now. And I think that was kind of the cold water bath of shock, for lack of a better term. You know, Crawford, he was great for them in the return to play. He was excellent against Edmonton, and he was really good against Vegas in a series that they lost in 5 games. And, you know, I think that even though they were kind of changing their roster to begin with, Scott, when you make that decision in goal, that was, I think, a surprise to a lot of people.
Do you think you could see Taze or Kane asking to be moved?
No, I don't. You know, that's you know, one of the challenges with Bowman is because he did a few interviews before he was on with us, you know, you have to find a different tack. You have to be able to say, okay, I know you've been asked this. We've got to try to ask you this. And, you know, he said that he told people that he had the conversation with those guys. And I asked him for the podcast today, are you concerned at all that any of them are not going to buy in, that any of them are going to say, you know, I've thought about it. This isn't for me, and I'd like to go elsewhere. And he said that at this time, and I guess the key is at this time, he is not expecting that. And he added that if that changed, he would have to deal with it. But at this time, he's not expecting that. And from what I can tell, just in my own research, independent of what Bowman said, I believe that is the truth. I don't think Taze has made it clear he doesn't want to go anywhere. I don't think Kane wants to go anywhere. Keith at times has hinted that he would consider it, especially if the team is not trying to win. But I don't believe that this time that's the case. The one that's going to be challenging is Seabrook, because, you know, if he's trying to get healthy and return to form. But if he doesn't, you know, that might be a bit of a question. However, in terms of him saying, I want out, they're not expecting that, and I don't think he wants to do that.
Elliot Friedman is with us from Hockey Night in Canada and the NHL on Sportsnet. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Are you surprised with some of the names that aren't signed, and specifically a Mike Hoffman and where he's going to go?
I am. I mean, the guy's a 30-goal scorer. You know, Granlund, you know, I think he had 30 points last year, which is low for him, but he's a really talented player. But, you know, one thing we've seen is that the forward market, Mike, has cratered. The goalies got their deals. The top D got their deals. You know, other than that, you know, the forwards really haven't got their deals. I think there's four of them. Four UFAs have signed contracts over $3 million up front. I think it is. It's Taylor Hall, it's Tyler Toffoli, it's Evgeny Dadonov, and it's Craig Smith in Boston. Like, forwards have gotten totally squeezed here, and you know, I think every dollar's tight. I think a lot of these teams have cash flow issues at the ownership level. You know, the cap is tight. There's a lot going on here. I mean, you look at what happened with the Mikheyev negotiation. You know, the Leafs came to him and said, this is the max we can do. And then they came back and they said, you know, we have to adjust that a little bit downwards. So, you know, all these teams, whether it's the 81.5 cap or an internal budget that they've got that's lower than the cap, they are squeezing pennies. And, you know, some guys have been affected. Now, I think what happened is, like I think there are teams that have gone to guys like Granlund and Hoffman and said, oh, we're happy to sign you. All we can offer you is $3.5 million. And they're like, you know, I think I'm worth more than that. Now, I think what's happening right now is we're going through arbitration. You know, we'll see, you know, where some of these teams end up if they have an arbitration case. Do they walk away from that arbitration? Do they use a buyout with the buyout window you get after arbitration? So will we see some more signings after this is done? That's one scenario that's been presented to me. We'll see. The other thing is that some of these guys might say, look, I'm not underselling myself. Maybe I'll wait. I'll see when the season starts. I'll see what situations open up. And maybe one team will say, okay, you know, someone gets hurt, or we really think we can win, we need this guy, you know, we'll figure it out then. And, you know, I think that that's kind of what's going on out there. You know, some guys will eventually reach a point where they say, oh, to hell with it, just I'll sign, let's go. But I think they are trying to see if they can, if somebody, something shakes loose on the market that gives them a better situation. That's kind of the read I'm getting out there.
Does Anthony Duclair have an agent yet? And the reason I'm asking this is because I didn't have an agent 1 year, and the team just said, "Oh, just come on in. You don't need one, and you can do it yourself." And that's not a good idea. And I don't suggest players do that.
Is that how you found your way to Rochester?
You know, I told you guys last week that I tried that too, and it's just not it, like I didn't like it. I took it it gets way too personal, and I wouldn't do it either. All I can tell you about Duclair is when Pierre Dorion revealed that Duclair was going at it alone, I reached out to him, and he sent me a statement, and I've tried to reach out to him since, and he said he would get back to me when the whole process was done. And, you know, I mean, I sent a note here and there, but generally I respect his position on it. So I'm kind of waiting to see where this process goes and when he'll decide he wants to chat again. So as far as I know right now, Mike, he still does not have an agent. He's doing this himself. I had heard there was some interest with Florida. I know another team told me at one point they expected him to sign there, which obviously hasn't happened. I don't know where that stands. But as far as I know, he's still representing himself.
Elliot, thank you for doing this. Thank you for apparently forgiving us, although we don't have confirmation on that, for pushing you back by a half an hour. And we tried to accommodate your ability to sleep in a little bit later by moving you to 8:30 instead of asking you to come on earlier. So I have a
9-year-old son. I don't get to sleep in much past 8 o'clock. But I appreciate the thought. Thank you.
We'll reset this thing for 8 o'clock next week and look forward to talking to you. Thanks, pal.
Well, I'm taking a couple weeks off.
Well,
we'll chat in the future.
That's what you think.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we're calling.
We'll just pocket dial you and pretend.
I appreciate the honesty. I do.
Okay. Enjoy the well-earned vacation, pal. We'll talk very soon.
All right, guys. Take care.
Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night in Canada, the NHL on Sportsnet, 31 Thoughts, the podcast with Jeff Merrick, the weekly column on sportsnet.ca. Ziggy took that interview over, and he probably made the decision to do that because he can tell that I'm really on this morning. Have you ever said Walker Buehler's day on?
No.
Or are you too are you too professional for a stupid line like that?
Come on, man.
Hey, no. That's not bad, is it? Or is
it's
it awful?
It's not good.
I think that's when Ziggy realized.
Yeah, I'll take the rest. I got it the rest of the
he
way,
had
bud.
To,
it's
he
okay.
had to take, yeah.
It's Friday.
Come on,
I know
man.
It's Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on, man.
Yeah. I got come on, man, by Dan Shulman. He took like an ESPN patent and threw it right back at me. I got come on, man, by Dan Shulman. Oh, the heartbreaks.
I got the picks coming, right?
We got Ziggy Locks. I mean, it was Anthopoulos, it was Friedman, two big deals, but the biggest deal.
You want to hear these.
Coming up next with the Ziggy NFL locks for week 7.